Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Monday, January 11th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. Three main things we're going to go over today. We're going to start with the Capitol discussion again and how we want this, painting the picture of how this ties together in a very clear way, as well as the bigger picture we've been painting for you for a long time, the war against you, right? The domestic terrorism direction, which, excuse me, has always been the point from 9/11 forward. Even the Patriot Act, if you really dig in, was used to look at you. It was used to surveil you and, you know, fund and arm and protect people over there that they claim were terrorists, but that's a whole nother discussion. But this is about where this is going in the logical end result, at least in this phase of their agenda. We're also going to talk about lockdowns. And a really important, I would say that's the most important topic of the show today, is experts. They're experts, in fact, coming out and saying, well, lockdowns are actually far more damaging than COVID-19 itself. And within that, there's another kind of couched point that's very important, which is, you know, just the casual consensus that this is, you know, under 70, you've got like a 0.05, you know, infection fatality rate, you know, like dramatically less severe than we were told. But that doesn't matter because we're all hyped up in fear and discussion about the unknowns and possible this and possible that. But I didn't think that we were, you know, hypothetical assumptions were supposed to be driving our medical health policy. But you'll find out that's in fact exactly what's driving it, the hypothetical. And we'll, you'll see what I mean when we get to it. And then, of course, the vaccines. Another horrible example of somebody who is paralyzed seemingly forever, people who are dying, all these things that I'll show you right on the websites themselves. But nobody seems to want to talk about this in the, you know, the mainstream journalism field. I wonder why that is. Clearly, they have, you know, the expression, they know, they don't bite the hand that feeds you. I'm sure you know what that means. But let's start off with a quick point that I wanted to show you in regard to the videos that we have been putting out over the last couple of days, in particular the one from yesterday, just to show you really quickly for those that are, you know, it's in, for us, this actually is the message here is tailored to people that are still on YouTube, maybe exclusively, and thinking that they need that to be able to get their word out. Now, yes, we still are pushing the stuff onto YouTube. And again, to show you, only because of this, only because I have this backup link here on Restream.io that they have yet to remove. I don't really know why. You'll notice if the videos on the backup channel never have an image or anything like that, because I can't add that. I can't even log into my account since I'm bringing it up. We can just show you right here. And, I'm using a friend's to be able to look at stuff, to be honest. So I forgot I had that open. But the point is, if I were to try to log in right there, it would say Google banned on all across platforms, which I've shown you more than once. But the point being is it's interesting. It's still there. But to the point that I'm starting out with is that this is a message to people that are still exclusively on there. Understand that there is absolutely life after YouTube. That's what we all need to realize. Let's just refresh this and see where we're at. BitChute, last time I checked, it was 11,000. We're 11,500. This is the show just from a couple of days ago. And here, by the way, the one that's still on, love to pause on a weird face for myself, 12,500, even on the YouTube version, which they'll probably remove the moment they feel like it's getting too much attention. Here's the Facebook post, 16,000. Now, yes, Facebook is obviously still mainstream, but the point is just to show you that since I have decided to pull, or really, actually, they forced my hand, but I can't thank them enough, since YouTube has gone, you know, deleted me unjustly, and the main channel anyway, I have exponentially increased my reach to people. And I'm noticing that across all platforms, including Odyssey and every other independent one as well. But these seem to be the highest. I still recommend you get away from Facebook and everything else as well. But realize people are thirsty for this. The illusion they're trying to paint for you about the majority all believing with the direction, the Great Reset, and all the, you know, everyone's terrorists that disagree with the social media. Everyone who, that's not the majority. We need to see that today, and that's the point. The reach is there. Now, I also want to point out that Robert had a great article go out today. Millions of Palestinian refugees suffer as UN aid is collapsing. It's a horrible topic, but it's a great article. And just to make the point here that ultimately Netanyahu, with Trump at the moment, and Biden next, is taking advantage of all the things that are going on. And like I showed you the other day, bombing Syria and killing people. No one cares about that. In the middle of the same day as the Capitol raid, interestingly enough, while Steve Mnuchin was in Israel with him, speaking about things from the United States. Isn't that funny? The timing that he just somehow knew that was going to happen and attacked at the exact same moment, or, you know, use it as cover, which is what we see every time. But here in this case, we're watching Netanyahu take advantage of the situation and use Trump's outgoing situation, as well as Biden wanting to appease him like they all do on the way in, speaking of the Israeli government, removing refugee funding. And this is not the U.S. directly, right? The U.S. has already removed their funding from the UNRWA for Palestinian refugees in particular. But this is attacking the entire program. This is stuff that these people absolutely rely on. This article goes over some horrifying points, such as the fact that about $16 billion have been stopped just by the blockade, which, by the way, is also illegal that no one seems to care about. But as well as, I believe the number was something like $48 billion over the process. I'm just off the top of my head. Read the article for yourself. The point is, tens of billions of dollars are being kept from these people because of everything that's happening there. And then they're trying to attack the way they get funding within that. It's just sickening. Just to show you what the U.S. government is happy to allow while they want to tell you about helping people. I also, by the way, just got sent this link. It's just audio, I believe, but Richard Willett had me on Glitch in the Code again. We had a great conversation. So I just want to make sure this link is included for you guys to check out for yourself. Just a really in-depth conversation about what he calls the wobbly bookcase, or the idea that there's a lot of I use the analogy of the tripod, right? Where there's the PCR test, the numbers, there's different things that if we kick one of these out, this thing will collapse. And we're already there. We just need people to recognize that this thing is not just wobbly, but damn near tipped over already. So great conversation. I recommend you check it out. Listen for yourself. Now, to start off the Capitol discussion, in general, what's following afterward, really, I recommend you check out the video I did if you want to get into the ins and outs of that day and what seemed important. To be honest, even looking back, there's only probably one or two things I would add to that you know, for the relevant full picture. But we're seeing this continue forward. And I, again, just want to point out the obvious. It's unbelievable we can be staring at a sitting president, right? You know, and being deleted on multiple platforms. We showed you Twitter. Now it's on Facebook. Now, I understand how their hatred of not just Trump, but the ideals that the people believed Trump was espousing, right? Whether he did or not is different. But the idea of, you know, doing things for the Americans before spending money on Israel's government, or, you know, the idea of America first, which was never really embodied by Trump's administration, or the idea about our constitutional rights, or the idea of, you know, the Constitution in general, freedom of speech, and, you know, all these different things that are seemingly what he says to fight for, but clearly is attacking them everywhere he can. But if he's an independent person after this, well, that's a different story. But they're attacking that concept. They're attacking the idea. So anybody that now comes after this and says, well, we defend free speech, well, suddenly now you're a Nazi insurrectionist terrorist. But I didn't even say anything about it. I'm not even a fan of Trump. It doesn't even matter. The moment you're now on the side defending this horrible action, regardless of who it is or what's it about, you are now on that side. And it's the same thing we see with two-party politics everywhere. Indefinitely now. But don't worry, they care about free speech and dialogue, like Jack wanted to say. But of course, then they do the exact opposite. But of course, Facebook sees a $34 billion erased from the market cap as Trump ban fallout continues to spook tech investors. Like, this is what I keep talking about in regard to all of these, you know, woke politics, that these people, whether Facebook or Gillette or any of these companies, are actually and intentionally attacking their own consumer base to show the virtue signal. Look at me. I'm going to make a men's razor commercial all about women and woke politics. I'm sure that worked out well for you. But they don't care. Same thing here. I don't think Facebook even cares. Well, I know they don't, because Facebook is not really a true company, in my opinion. They're just an arm of the government. Now, it's much more complicated and nuanced than that, but that's the basic understood principle we need to look at here, that these companies, YouTube, Google at large, Facebook, any of them, they are, I would argue, at the very least, aggressively influenced by the government. And they also know that they, same thing, bite the hand that feeds them. So they're going to listen. So that's why they're willing to do stuff like this that they know will disenfranchise and isolate and kick out a huge, arguably in some cases, at least half of these platforms. But on top of that, we're also seeing them go after the platforms they would go to after that, which just shows you that this is not necessarily about, this is about attacking ideologies. It's about people who believe things that they don't like. Now, understand, the whole point of all of this is to act as if these things lead to real violence. Now, yes, anything can lead to real violence. Anything. Just because, you know, I mean, you could literally make up an argument for why any action or concept or object could eventually lead to some form of violence. It doesn't mean we should ban, remove, delete all of the things from the world. You'll be left standing in the matrix blank white room. There's nothing there. We have laws for these things already. This is the point. And look, I've barely started, and I already know that there would be people that would make this out to be pro-Trump. Those people are the ones that are lost. This is about the reality of the Uniparty and how they use these politics, whether the people within it even realize it, to keep us lost, to keep us addicted to this broken system, the hamster wheel that continues. We already have laws on the books for all of the things they're claiming happened. Any single one of these things we have. I mean, I'm not even arguing that I agree with these laws or agree with the way that they can track these people down. What I'm simply saying is they, just like Whitney pointed out, they have intense, incredibly technologically advanced artificial intelligence type facial recognition. They have cameras everywhere. The point is the people that broke the windows, the people that did it, committed any crime within the obvious surveillance network around the Capitol, they could find them, they could track them down, they can charge them with a crime. Why do you need to create an entirely new legislation, which by the way is not entirely new, bills towards domestic terrorism, a Patriot Act 2.0, has been something they've been trying to justify for a long time. Oh, weird. Just like with COVID, this justified exactly what they wanted before it. Isn't that funny? But why do you think we need this? I mean, I want a logical answer from somebody out there who thinks that if you think every single one every person involved in this was a terrorist, even the guy that just casually walked in that door not realizing what was happening, right? Even that guy, because why? He's a conservative. Because he's a Trump supporter. Oh, what about the journalist who was there standing next to him just documenting what happened? Is he a terrorist? Oh, no. Why not? Because he's not a conservative. What about that film guy over there that is a conservative that didn't join in the fighting and the violence? Oh, but he is a terrorist because he's a conservative. There is actually rhyme and reason. But the point is that it's pick and choose. There's no standard to it. You're either present and a criminal or you're not and you're not. You don't get to say, well, that guy is there. But that guy in the middle who was only filming, he's not. But that guy who was also filming but is a Republican, well, he is. That's what they're doing. Broad brush, every single person that was present is now a terrorist, according to these people. Even the politicians who didn't necessarily promote it, but just simply argued that the election was manipulated, which, by the way, a child could see that was the truth. And I'm not fighting for Donald Trump. But you see, I'm in the middle there. They can't stand that because they need you to be polarized so they can paint it with the broad brush. Use the laws already in place if that's what needs to happen. This is like everything else. I make the argument about the lynching discussion. I forget where it was, but they passed a law about lynching that made a lynching illegal. Why? That was a political point. There's already crimes. Or there's already laws against killing. There's already laws against violence, against assault. There's already laws against any number of things that you could have charged somebody with if they attacked, assaulted, killed, and hung somebody, right? There's plenty of ways you can put them in prison for the rest of their life. To make a law that says that specific thing is a crime, even though there's already laws that make it a crime, is just about politics and virtue signaling. I could go off on this forever. The point is that it's really messed up that we've got people that I would have thought would know better and do know better that are pushing this for politics, for profit, for notoriety, because they know that this is where the next 4 years is going to go. So they're jumping on the gravy train and it makes me sick. An entire platform has now been pulled down. Parler, by the way, I think Gab is too. I noticed that right before I went live. Just because people think that they're bad places. Now, do you understand how many horrible, horrible, disgusting things happen on Twitter every day? Pedophilia, rape, molestation. Yeah, some of these things get pulled down. Some of them don't, though. Do you realize how many times I've seen these discussions of people pointing out pedophilia, like the kind of things that are just under the radar, where you've got like some thing posing as some kind of child toy unwrap, and at the end of the day, you realize that it's actually wildly sexualized. Those things are right now on Twitter, right now. Same with YouTube. But they don't care. But because they want to insinuate that everybody everywhere, look, because there's people on Parler or Gab that use that to make hypothetically a plan to commit crimes, does not immediately then broadly make every person who's on that platform a problem. It also doesn't broadly make the platform a problem. But what they want you to think is that anything outside of their sphere is a problem. So that's why you have to go to Twitter. You have to go to Facebook. You have to go to Google and YouTube, because they know they have them controlled. They've cornered the market. They don't want you jumping off to some new platform, you know, like the one that I'm working on. I can promise you it's going to be a big deal when they try to come after, and they will. But it's horrifying to see that this is the case. And just because I'm willing to argue for free speech, I will be attacked as a conservative. All these people lost in the two-party illusion. It's quite pathetic. Parler sues Amazon for taking platform offline, citing breach of contract. Again, they don't even care, right? I mean, they'll pay off. They'll probably pay off however much it takes to pay them off just to be able to pander to the oligarchy, right? We're doing what we're told. We're part of the system. We have a contract with them. It doesn't matter. They say bad thought crime things. Remove them. Now, as Luke points out, which I didn't see this until today, which just blew me away. First, to the tweet from Ron Paul with no explanation other than, quote, repeatedly going against our community standards. Exactly like we're all dealing with, right? Just this broad, nameless, undefined claim of violating this big, long packet of things that we don't really point to or define. And even within then, when you can prove that you didn't actually violate any of those things, they still don't care. They just use it as a broad stamp, just like they're broad brushing everybody. Facebook has blocked Ron Paul from managing his own page. Never have we received a notice, he says, of violating community standards in the past, and nowhere is the offending post identified. Exactly. It's not about anything other than being Ron Paul. How do we not see this? Ron Paul is not a left or a right. Wake up, guys. And of course, the point, I'm not speaking to everyone in the chat, right? I'm not speaking to everybody who is here and aware and knowing. Somebody made this comment to me, by the way, and I thought it's a good time to point it out. Hopefully you guys will remember the point of this show. And I know most of you do. I'm just saying this so people understand it. The reality is that this show is made for the people that are still lost. We are making this show to aim at those people that need to be woken up with honest fact reporting. And you know, and there's plenty of way deeper things that we don't get into for that very reason. So when I'm speaking at that, it's not like everyone in the chat needs to be spoken to like they don't understand these things. Trust me, I know you guys I know why you're here. You're intelligent. And I'm not saying that you're by default because you're here means you're intelligent. You're intelligent people. I can see that by the way you talk in the chat. The point is that this is aimed at everybody out there that's still unaware of what's really happening. That's the end game. Because what else are we doing if we're not doing that? We don't need to sit in a corner and high-five each other about how we know what's going on. We need to reach those people over there that think we're crazy. Ron Paul is going to hurt them, right? The hierarchy enslaving you, the broad idea. Ron Paul, of all people, who has an unbelievably consistent track record, is censored on Facebook. And as it points it out, they've never even given him same kind of thing with me. Because this is when you realize that it's not about anything other than removing him because some mass group people flagged him, and that's how this system works. Or however they decided he was a problem. Probably because he's honest, truthful, and cuts to the middle of the two-party illusion, and that is very alarming for them. I mean, you notice how many people out there are being censored for things, but they get notices. And they're still unjust, by the way. And they're unjust in general. But there are people that are getting like completely unjust claims. Like I got impersonation. But people like Ron and myself at this moment aren't even getting a notification because it's not about the truth. Here's the New York Times framing the entire thing in a way that, you know, keeps their deflated Russiagate. I mean, it's pretty pathetic that you can watch how obviously this thing has just fallen on its side and now they're just trying to poke it forward. Right? Oh, look at this. Look at the mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol. In other words, were let in multiple locations by the police. But yeah, they stormed it. And by the way, there are plenty of people who did. I think that's very apparent. The point is not that there was none, but the point is that not everybody there is with this dumb, ignorant, naive, broadly brushed idea. They know this. If we were doing this about people they were defending, they would laugh at us. You can't claim that everybody here is the same, you stupid conspiracy theorists. But the New York Times, of course, they can argue that the entirety of the people there, I would argue tens of thousands of people. I don't know. I didn't do a count. I saw a lot of big shots of people. I could be way off, but a lot of people, and argued that every single one of them, as they say, resembled in fervor and style. So meaning that every one of them acted the same and styled the same. That's stupid. The ragtag bands in Russia, they claim, who clamored for the revival of the Soviet Union. Wow. I mean, what an embarrassing reach, New York Times. I mean, that is very pathetic. Andrew Higgins writes from Moscow down to the dress code. Down to the dress code? See, now this is where they're going to start making these points that will probably reveal that I argue there were very clearly people there that were not actually who they were or who they were said they were. Right. So all of a sudden we're going to start pointing these things out. Oh, look at the dress code, the embrace of banners and the banners. Yeah, because nobody waves banners except people from, you know, Russia, Soviet, you know, the ragtag bands of Russians who want the Soviet Union. Of course, nobody does otherwise than that. Or banners of seemingly lost causes. You mean like, I don't know. This is just so bad. Really, really bad. And this is the New York Times. Right? The paper of record. All these really stuffy opinions about how the best ninja. And this is what they have to say? That's not just bad. That's bad journalism. That is a obviously intentionally used to just, they're trying to make it into what they want you to think it is. That this meandering group of people, where there was a few of them and a few crowds, I should say, that were being pushed and violent and aggressive, made every single one of them there Russian insurrectionists. It's just so dumb. I can't even. So here's the point, though. Here's what Donald Trump said on January 7th. Okay, this is about what happened there. Now, I'm showing you this because of the way that they're still trying to push it, right? First of all, Donald Trump was very clear, and I'm not defending Donald Trump, as I think my entire track record is painfully clear, calling him out in every 10 seconds, but that he said that they should be there to protest. Now, whether you want to wink-wink think that he wink-wink meant to be violent, you don't get to do that. But that's what the New York Times and everybody else is doing. Oh, we knew. We know what Trump was wink-wink telling them to be wink-wink protest. Like, clearly. How dumb is that? He said to go, and even if he did mean that, you can't prove it. But he said he wanted them to go out and protest because they believe, and they're right, that this election was manipulated. For both sides, in my opinion, but it doesn't mean that they're not right in what they're saying. So then people went out and some people got violent and no one wants to question whether or not there was an agenda happening there, whether people were trying to make that happen for obvious political reasons. And when everybody everywhere was claiming this exact thing was going to happen, we said this would happen months ago and here we are and it's happening and there's nobody there to stop it. How dumb do we have to be to realize that at the very least, that this was allowed to happen? I mean, you see those people walking through that statue room. I argue they didn't expect them to just walk. They look like they were on a tour. They're walking, they're looking with their phone, taking pictures. They're all, oh my God, we're in the building, this is so cool. They expected them probably to ransack things like Antifa and different people have in their riots, but they didn't seem to. But here's what he has to say about it. And I think this is incredibly interesting for a lot of different reasons. Let me play the video real quick.
I would like to begin by addressing the heinous attack on the United States Capitol. Like all Americans, I am outraged by the violence, lawlessness, and mayhem.
Well, it's just interesting to start off right out of the gate, right? That so it, what they're claiming is that he's like supporting this, right? That he egged it on and he came out and said that they should stand down, which is the point I forgot to say a second ago. That he finally said after that they should stand down, that they should go home, that they want peace, and in no way, even remotely, not even a wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of a way, that he suggests that they should do more or act more and continue to be violent. He never even asked him to in the beginning. So now he's coming out and he's saying, well, this is a horrible thing. But here's the interesting part. There's a lot of Trump supporters who were probably there who did probably think that they wanted to do that. Right? There's plenty of people. Doesn't mean every single person there was part of some problem to do this, or some of them weren't led by a agent provocateur style of action, which happens every damn time. But there were people, and I know some of them, that were saying, yeah, you know, that they were happy this happened. So my point is, what do those Trump supporters think right now? When he's coming out and saying that, I find that to be an interesting dynamic, but it goes both ways. Right. So this is an interesting thing to see as it develops, where it seems that this whole speech from Trump almost seems as if it was written by somebody else. It does not seem very characteristic of a lot of the things he's been doing. Even when he talks about coronavirus, he doesn't get into China or anything like he does every single time.
I immediately deployed the National Guard and federal law enforcement to secure the building and expel the intruders.
So what that also means, by the way, if this is not obvious to everybody, is that the actions there, right, the police, the people responding, were arguably, not even arguably, I mean, he's the sitting president, were acting at the direction of the president. So that means that that supporter who was shot at the not directly at the direction of Trump, but at the direction of people he sent in there to push them back, right? So because this whole narrative is kind of spun into where, like, there's like this Democrat You know, and like, trust me, I'm very obviously saying, and not from a Democrat Republican perspective, but, you know, a government versus us perspective, that there were people that were there in order to make these things happen. That's my opinion based on the facts and the data of the videos and everything else. But nonetheless, there's this push from within the two-party illusion that this is a, you know, a Democrat psyop and it was all designed for this and that. But is that not, isn't, it was Trump's government and his deployment of National Guard and so on that pushed this back. I just think that's an interesting point, is it not?
America is and must always be a nation of law and order. The demonstrators who infiltrated the Capitol have defiled the seat of American democracy.
Now, he was very intent, and rightly so, careful in what he said right there, right? So the people that did go in and do that, yes, and he's clear in this speech, and anybody should be, it was wrong. What they were doing was mindless, and it was damn, I mean, I'm not saying that these people don't deserve certain things like this. I'm talking about the governments out there that are stealing from you, robbing from you, putting you in jail, restoring the economy, destroying your livelihood, on and on and on. But it doesn't mean that I agree with it, though. Right? There's plenty of times where people deserve things that I don't think would be conducive to actual change. So when they went in there and they started breaking things and pushing things, I argue those people had nothing other in mind than to go in there and cause chaos, which then suggests there was more going on when you see the rest of the crowd that I would argue were, I mean, I saw examples of people beforehand saying that we shouldn't allow this to get, you know, other than being attacked by other people. Shouldn't allow it to be chaotic. And they have seen many Trump supporters say this in the regard that they don't want to be like the other side. Doesn't mean that there's not some that do so.
To those who engage in the acts of violence and destruction, you do not represent our country. And to those who broke the law, you will pay.
So it's interesting because, again, I argue that there were some Trump supporters that probably got caught up in it, led by agent provocateurs or not, that are probably feeling really upset about that because he's saying, well, you're a problem. And that they, some of them probably thought they were acting with what they were wrongly convinced to think was his desire, in my opinion.
Just been through an intense election and emotions are high, but now tempers must be cooled and calm restored.
See, it's so funny. This channel's turning into InfoWars. Why? Because I'm objectively discussing what this person is saying? You are the problem, man. Paul, you are the problem. Idiot people that cannot recognize that there is a middle ground are what are destroying this country. That's pathetic. I'm sorry it bothers me, but it really does. Because the problem here, guys, is that we can't have an objective discussion in this ridiculous political climate without people like Paul inserting their nonsensical 2 cents. Half a cent, maybe. It just bothers me. Okay, now it seems like he says he's joking. If you were, I apologize. But the point still stands, though, right? Because that's what we get. We get this constant middle. You can't. And by the way, it's not even so much about the people in the chat. Again, Paul, I'm sorry if you were actually kidding. It's about the mainstream media and how they are driving that. And I mean, aggressively driving that into the dialogue, right? They do not want us to be able to have an objective perspective. They don't want people that don't want to be left or right involved in the conversation at all. They want to pretend like we're the crazy conspiracy theorists. Except you have to remember that 44% of the country, at least last time I checked, still registered as independent. When's the last time you saw an independent candidate on the final stage? Realize what that shows you. It's just so crazy how we can see it so clearly. And by the way, I think they can too. Most of them just are invested in the broken system.
We must get on with the business of America. My campaign vigorously pursued every legal avenue to contest the election results.
And this is what I mean by the way someone wrote it for him. Like, that was clear. Like, you can almost tell the way he emphasized results because you expected him to say something else. He doesn't anywhere in here even get in to whether it was manipulated, rigged, or whatever, the usual things you hear him say. So I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm saying at the end of the day, if we want this to, you know, if he wants to end this in a way that makes him look less like what they're trying to make him out to be, this was the way he should have done it. So I think it was good. But nonetheless, there was obviously election manipulation, and I think that's obvious. And by the way, there has been every single year, as far as I can look back, verifiably so. So anybody out there arguing like it's the myth of election fraud are dishonest people, period, or are not good at their job.
My only goal was to ensure the integrity of the vote. In so doing, I was fighting to defend American democracy. I continue to strongly believe that we must reform our election laws.
Now, think about it like this, though. If you believe that Trump truly believes what he just said, if you believe that Trump truly believes that this was manipulated, how are we in a world where he's not allowed to say that? Like, really think about that. How is he in a world where the president of the country is not allowed to stand up and be like, I believe this was manipulated? I mean, you don't need evidence to be able to assert your opinion, especially on a platform for social profiles. Like, understand, not just his POTUS, but his personal account. So he's not even allowed to stand up and express his personal opinion. Why? Because they don't agree with that opinion. But I thought that's what social media was for. You're following? Like, this is crazy. But just because they want to go back, going back to the first point, want to make it out to be that this statement can lead to what we just saw, well, now you just can't even hold that opinion anymore. Anybody that believes in this direction is either too lost to see where it will eventually end up, probably biting you in the ass as well, or doesn't care for a litany of reasons. Probably profit highest among them. Same thing with the two-party illusion. I just can't believe we're at a point in a country that screams about free speech and liberty and democracy where this is happening right in front of us. And, I'm not even arguing democracy is what we should want. I mean, you guys, if you've watched this show long enough, you should know my, you know, interestingly different opinions. But at the end of the day, and that's in regard to, like, you know, anarchism and maybe libertarianism, like, I'm way off the path. I think we should burn this whole thing down. Not literally. I'm talking about, like, removing the system and drawing outside the lines. But that's way too, maybe we're just starting to get there. People are just starting to go, wait, this system is broken. But I'm, you know, six different shows ahead of us now. But hopefully we can see that we don't want what they're trying to peddle at us, whatever they want to call it.
To verify the identity of the vote. In so doing, I was fighting to defend American democracy. I continue to strongly believe that we must reform our election laws to verify the identity and eligibility of all voters and to ensure faith and confidence in all future elections. Now Congress has certified the results. A new administration will be inaugurated on January 20th.
Now remember, this was set on January 7th, right? So there's actually been discussion of him sort of walking back what he said right there. I haven't necessarily seen that confirmed, but I didn't really dig too deep. But he, you know, the argument is that he basically just said, yes, I lost. And yes, a new administration will be coming in. Because even if he, you know, was going to pull it off, he wouldn't say a new administration. But some people are making it out to be that that's not what he really meant. And that's usually what Q does, though.
My focus now turns to ensuring a smooth, orderly, and seamless transition of power. This moment calls for healing and reconciliation. 2020 has been a challenging time for our people. A menacing pandemic has upended the lives of our citizens.
No, it's the government, right? Not the pandemic. Right. But left unchecked, if it is even remotely, like, if it is at all what we're being told, you know, and we know as a matter of fact that it's not as severe as we were told to begin with, if left unchecked, it would cause dramatically less damage than what we're seeing right now by our government actions, which, by the way, I will get into and prove to you. I mean, this is a common, the stats we're at now with this are being repeatedly stated in every possible way. And it's dramatically less severe, under 70, as I said, 0.05. And this is general. I would argue it's way lower than that, especially, and these are the numbers you're getting with the PCR test, right? These are the numbers you're getting with combining pneumonia, flu, and COVID-19. Imagine what it would be without it. It's just unbelievable that we can be staring at this so obviously.
Isolated millions in their homes, and seamless transition of power. This moment calls for healing and reconciliation. 2020 has been a healing and reconciliation. 20 millions in their homes, damaged our economy, and claimed countless lives. Defeating this pandemic and rebuilding the greatest economy on earth will require all of us working together.
So doesn't that seem to suggest that he just promoted Build Back Better? That's just my take. I'm sure people that support him wouldn't want to believe that, but if we're, you know, I mean, I'm sure he always talks about, you know, building the economy, but, you know, now that he's on the way out, talking about rebuilding the economy and working together, that doesn't really give me good feelings.
It will require a renewed emphasis on the civic values of patriotism, faith, charity, community, and family. We must revitalize the sacred bonds of love and loyalty that bind us together as one national family. To the citizens of our country, serving as your president has been the honor of my lifetime. And to all of my wonderful supporters, I know you are disappointed, but I also want you to know that our incredible journey is only just beginning. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
So I wanted to play the full thing just so I could, you know, you guys could see it. The end part was just him saying, you know, what you'd expect. But, you know, it does seem to be saying he's going to be doing a Trump TV and, you know, who knows what's going to happen. Now, a quick add on to that before I jump to the next topic. Remember that they're talking about impeaching him still. They're talking about the 25th Amendment. And if that doesn't work, then they're going to impeach him. I mean, this is what confused me when I looked into it. This is after he is gone. So I'm thinking, wait, why would they impeach him? But it turns out that if you're impeached, the whole point on top of it is that you are unable to run for president again. But that's a question to be asked about the previous one, because he was technically impeached. But there's, you know, but of course, it wasn't officially finished by the Congress. So maybe that's why. But at the end of the day, they're actually going to continue to run this through and use your tax dollars and use congressional time to impeach somebody who's no longer even president. They're promising that's going to happen. How disgusting. It doesn't matter how. Look, I am of all people have been screaming about the horrible things he's been doing, whether foreign policy, whether Yemen, whatever else. But that doesn't mean that I want to waste all this time to impeach him, which is not. I mean, if you're going to do something to put him in jail, sure, put yourselves in jail at the same time. But impeaching him after the fact is basically a virtue signal. And it's disgusting how this has been used. I think the whole thing, 2016 forward, when WikiLeaks told us that Clinton, the emails we revealed, that they wanted Trump on that final stage, and they made sure he'd be on that final stage. Don't think that's not important. People said at the time it's because they thought he'd lose and it would help her win. I don't think so anymore. I think the entire thing was meant to happen with Trump being put in office. And I said this right in the beginning, by the way. The whole Q psyop and everything, it led us right to where we are now. It stopped all these people from actually reacting. The people that would have been marching through the streets, the militias and the patriots out there that would have been like, there's no way we're going to let this happen. If Clinton was president, there's no way they would have let any of this happen. At least they would have tried to stop it. But Trump being there, well, the most adamant people in the country that wanted to defend those things were quiet. That wasn't an accident. And now we see that Trump and Q led right into the Domestic Terrorist Act and everything else they're going to do, and they're handing it right off. Guys, we have to realize whether he knew it or not. My opinion, that seems like a very logical way that they could have put this together. And also, it seems to suggest, like I was saying before, that Trump, it's almost as if he was promised things that didn't get delivered. And that's why he's sort of bucking the system on the way out, but knows that he can't just come off and say everything, look, this and that, and point it out, because then he'll be put in jail for sure, which they're already trying to do. I mean, Iran reached out to Interpol. Did I keep that up? I think I did. Oh, no, it looks like I got rid of it. But Iran has reached out to Interpol for 47 different U.S. officials, Trump being one of them, in regard to the assassination of Soleimani, which, by the way, was a very obvious crime. That was one of the most obvious assassinations we've seen from the U.S. government. There's been plenty that are just as horrible, but that was owned. We did that. So my point is, I wonder if that was intentional, that people like Pompeo let that happen and let Trump think he was this evil person in order to let that happen so that could swing back around and be put on Trump's doorstep. These are just thoughts that I'm having. Now, understand that this seems to be the outcome. Now, Trump is, you know, not really going along with the game plan, as it would seem. And, it, you know, rightly so, because clearly he didn't get what he was promised. At least that's the way it looks. Anyway, enough hypothetical. I definitely think we're going to see more happen. And the alarming part is that this is very clearly leading towards the domestic terrorism, you, right? It's about you. It's about anyone dissenting. Think about Julian Assange, for instance. Julian Assange, regardless of what you think about WikiLeaks or whether you think he's a, you know, insider shill that's tricking us all, the point is it doesn't matter. The point is the idea of it, which, by the way, I don't think that. That's just my opinion. The idea is that they're using this to attack independent media. Now, if the idea that somebody can release leaked documents, the person who leaks them being protected under the Whistleblower Act, and then reveal those crimes, which are crimes, by the way, which The Guardian and plenty of other mainstream media outlets also did, and that person is still currently in jail, what does that show you? This is all about attacking people who are revealing their crimes. Their crimes, they're being the government. The people who are trying to pretend like they're fighting for you. Now, here is the point about the journalist here. This is an independent, or no, technically, is this guy here is an independent journalist. Credentialed, press credentialed, independent journalist who, you know, you look at, he sells his photography and what else to AP and other places, CNN, wherever else, right? So this is the guy who filmed this footage. Okay, so now the point is that this is in, oh, and by the way, I figured I would just show you this as well, actually. This is the film, this graphic video. It's not really graphic, right? It's actually just a guy, a police officer, who gets stuck in the door between these people that were pushing in and being aggressive. Violent? Yeah, I'd say yes, violent. There are people that were hitting, but by and large, it was more kind of like pushing back and forth. But this is supposed to be graphic. This image of, and by the way, you'll notice that when this goes on, this is the guy. Now, look, I'm not trying to diminish that that's horrible. He's probably being crushed, and that's a pretty scary thing. And as well as the fact that who knows what's going to happen, you're, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of things, reasons this is not okay. But the guy standing next to him, who's the Trump supporter, helps him, puts his helmet down, tries to get the police over to help him. I just don't realize, they're framing this as if it's like the smoking gun about how everyone there is a terrorist. And really, I don't know why you want to, I mean, there are plenty of people that are being pushed from behind, and this is just really a, just kind of a mat, they're just being pressed together. Now look, you can see his lips. I mean, there's definitely violence happening. I'm not diminishing that. But see, this is the point. This guy's helping him. And they're going, hey, you, hey, he's pointing, hey, come help this guy. Does that seem like what a terrorist would do? Or a coup rioter insurrectionist? Right? The point is not to say that there weren't people that were doing horrible things there, that were breaking windows and you know, throwing and macing cops back and forth. But the point is that there were also people there that were just caught up in what was happening. And I would argue that was most of the people. I'm saying most in this specific location, but by and large, what was happening. And by the way, guys, that is backed up by the evidence. Your feelings don't really matter when you're staring at the evidence. The fact that you have three locations where police let them in. Now, of course, I also ask why, okay, if they're willing to shoot a woman who's jumping through a window with no discernible threat happening, right? No gun, nothing. But and then you get these people who are literally being violent, right? Who are spraying back and pushing back and that no one gets shot. I'm not arguing they should have been shot, but what's the why the different operating procedure? It just doesn't make much sense to me. But now to the point, why is this guy not also a terrorist? I'm not arguing he should be. I'm not arguing that that's even an intelligent, logical thing to say. But he was present. That's him standing there filming this. I mean, he's in there, right? He couldn't have gotten out with where he was because there was lying, there's people packed in behind him. So you could argue, one, that he didn't mean to end up right there, just like a lot of people in there didn't mean to end up right there. And you could also argue that he was just there to film what was happening, sort of like a lot of other people who have cameras and a lot of other people who are there to film, right? So you, the absurd notion that just because you are of a certain ideology and present makes you a terrorist is about as dumb as everything else they've ever done in foreign policy. Oh, what do you know? Look at that. You mean like when you tell you that everybody that lives in that country is a terrorist? When they tell you that every Palestinian is a terrorist? Oh, wait, a connection. What do you know? A connection to their absurd narratives. Who would have thought? Whitney made an excellent point today that I want to share that I thought was really, really interesting. We're talking about this war, this new war on domestic terror that's been trying to build. It's always been that. You've always been the focus. But the point is, just like she points out in War on Terror, that by the way, undeniably, if that was ever, which we know it wasn't the real goal to eliminate terrorism because they created it, but the point is that the argument is they were doing that and it's exponentially more. Exponentially more terrorism in the world than there was before they started the war on eliminating the thing that's now more than ever. That's really dumb. At the very least, you should say, hey, pump the brakes on the war on domestic terror. You're only going to cause more because that seems to be what they do. But nobody cares about that. But her point is that they know how to create these things. They went over, they destabilized countries, they create these elements with the help of the Israeli government, if not leading the charge. They create these foreign terrorists, these elements, as we've seen in Syria, as they fund and arm and use them with Turkey and everybody else. I mean, these are all verified points, guys. Now, not to say that there weren't some insiders that were, you know, psychological operation types. But the point is they use these situations to actually create the people that they then use to justify their actions. So whether or not this was actually QAnon or whatever you want to call it, her point was that they're going to, this is what they're trying to do to create that resistance. So the point is when we see things like this, where we're all of a sudden seeing, I was going to jump ahead real quick, saying, uh-oh, armed protesters planned in all 50 states and it's all coming down. We should ask immediately whether that is actually happening and being driven by these people being radicalized and disenfranchised. Now, arguably, I mean, my opinion, I don't think that what we're seeing is actually even remotely what we're being told it is. But that doesn't mean there are not people involved that believe they're doing what they should be doing. Like the FBI always, damn near 90%+ of the time, according to the New York Times, when they wrote about this, are creating the terrorism they're stopping with their informants. So how do we know that there weren't some present? By the way, we do know that because we already talked about this beforehand. There are people that were supposed to be here that had FBI informants. This is all discussions we've talked about. So knowing that, are we not even willing to consider whether or not they created part of it? And on top of that, going forward, are they not going to possibly do that again? Use informants to drive some people that are radicalized? And if they do that, does that, they will then say that means that everybody involved in anything in that narrative or anybody, Q or Trump or MAGA or anything is now a terrorist because see, we just saw one thing happen. It's, I mean, anyone knows that's dumb. We all know that. But people are emotionally charged up and people are invested in the political narrative. My point, though, is that there were plenty of people that were there that are also being called terrorists, people that were actually filming, people that were not involved in violence, people that were, in fact, actually journalists, but just not for Fox and CNN and whatever other mainstream outlet they want to claim. And there's some that were actually arrested. The point being that they were present in filming and now they're terrorists. But this guy, nope. Why? Because he's not a conservative. Or at the very least, he's not part of that circle. So it's no longer whether you do something wrong. It's whether you associate with somebody wrong. Whether you think things that are wrong. Welcome to 1984. Now, this we also saw that doesn't seem to be talked about. I don't know why nobody's really diving into this conversation. This was right in the middle of this, January 6th. Improvised explosive devices, IEDs, like we heard from Iraq and wherever else. Found at the Capitol. Okay. As it says, at least one improvised explosive device. At least one? Where's the follow-up? Was there more? No one is saying anything. Also, it says the device was found outside a building. There, as Burmese was pointing out today, there was backpacks and stuff left everywhere. Now we're also seeing stuff. They're feds saying they found a pickup truck full of bombs. Full of bombs and guns? Are we going to pretend like that wouldn't be a huge, where is that? I mean, they're already starting to walk back the insurrection word. They're already starting, but yet they had bombs and guns. No, this was obvious, guys. This is either not even true, in my opinion, or this is something that was meant to happen that didn't happen. And if that's the case, then why wouldn't they be talking about it? Like I said the other day, this is a Washington Bridge 9/11 kind of story. If you remember that, there was a discussion about the Washington Bridge and what was happening, and then it just disappeared. Why would that be? I think this was meant, there was more that was meant to happen. And I think that's quite clear. But now we're seeing where this is going. Even the German foreign minister saying, you know, let's create a Marshall Plan for democracy following the riot on the Capitol. I don't know how you can continue to call it a riot when your police officers let most of them in. Right, see, that's the old pesky facts and all, you know, get in the way of a good story. Democracy in Europe is impossible without democracy in the U.S. Okay, so now this is the point, is these people in Europe are reliant on the U.S. government for their broken system, right? This is the blob Caitlin Johnstone talks about. So what they're doing is desperately, democracy isn't even what's happening. They're saying that we don't have our control over everything without the U.S., so we need to make sure the U.S. has control, right? Just insert control instead of democracy. That's what they're really saying. Calling upon Washington to join forces with a Marshall Plan for democracy. We must not yield any room to the enemies of liberal democracy. Okay, so what about conservative democracy? Oh, that's terrorists. So now it's not even just democracy, it's liberal democracy. Do you see where this is going? They're just in every way dividing you. Don't fall for it. It's government versus people. That's what this is really about. This applies not only in the U.S., but also here in Germany and Europe. The Marshall Plan for European Recovery Program was an aid campaign launched in the U.S. in 1948 to help Western Europe rebuild after World War II and to prevent the spread of communism on the continent. Washington pumped billions of dollars into the program, and Berlin was one of its major recipients. Now, remember, even then, even the concept, even remember the clip I just played the other day about Cuba and the CIA guy telling you that they made stuff up from whole cloth. You know, making people believe that the communists eat babies for breakfast and all of that, right? Like, that's, they lied. And it's easy to see, but yet that's still, that concept is still present today. Governments are the problem. I don't care what you want to name it. A government can be just as damaging no matter what you call it if allowed to run free and have no, without being controlled by its people. Which, by the way, should ultimately, finally, eventually make us realize that the government needs to go altogether. But that's way too ahead for people right now. Tracking down and eradicating the roots of social division in their societies will be a... This is so alarming. Tracking down and eradicating the roots of social division in their societies will be, quote, one of the greatest tasks for future Americans and Europeans. So let's not pretend like that's not a greater reset concept. Rooting out the social division. So that means that if your discussion, if your thoughts, if your action, if they are creating social division, well, that has to go. We have to eradicate that because that's the world they're building. The belief in cohesion in democracy as the most humane form of government, which that's just what they say because that's what they've chosen to use to control you, and in the persuasive power of science and reason. Yeah, that's just to squeeze those in too. And whatever else, we're right about everything, can only be upheld through cooperation, and there are no better, closer, more natural partners than the U.S. Right, of course, because they're talking about cooperation between elitist governments. Not you. Don't get confused. They don't care what you think. They want to cooperate with the other governments that have power and make sure they keep that power. That's what they want. But everyone's reaching out for their peace, and now Biden is saying that the... As we already pointed out, people who stormed the Capitol are domestic terrorists. And everyone there is being branded as such. And that's why they're leading to this domestic terrorism bill, which we knew was coming, which we predicted was going to happen. The Patriot Act 2.0 is absolutely on our doorstep. And by the way, Biden basically wrote the Patriot Act to begin with. There's a clip of him already admitting this that went around social media today. But this is totally reality. This is basically the bill he wrote that was just barely, not even really changed. And he's happy to say that, right? That destroyed this country. The Patriot Act was it's hard to say the beginning. There's plenty of points you could probably point to as the beginning. Or the Patriot Act was one of the, that was what would the accelerant to the direction we were going that ruined any semblance of free. They have the ability to just take whatever they want, right? I think that was the moment when suddenly your constitutional rights became a choice for these people. They always really were, but now they can argue, well, terrorism or fear or danger or whatever arbitrary concept and just claim that means they can lock you up for a cage forever. Like the NDAA has made, like Derek Bros pointed out, or any number of things we pointed out. It's all coming against you. Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, they are going to direct this at you, and this Domestic Terrorism Act is now just saying it. They're afraid of you. They always have been, because it's never really been about anything other than controlling the populace. And as I said a moment ago, now they're claiming, the FBI is claiming, armed protests are being planned at all 50 state capitals? How in the world could they possibly know that? Right. I mean, I understand that they're investigators, but understand to know that they're planned at all 50 capitals. Doesn't that seem to suggest that, I don't know, they have informants in there? Yeah, sure does. And of course, when you realize that they always do and that most of the time they're involved with the things they stop, well, it's probably a good guess. So as we're seeing the FBI now involved with the 50 state capitol protests, we need to begin to ask whether or not this whole thing has been at least has happened with the somewhat involvement of the FBI, how many times have we seen that? I just pointed this out about the last thing we discussed, that you could find out that the shooter actually had, they warned about the shooter to the FBI. So they would have documents. They discussed it. They told him, no, we were not going to interview him. And then when they came back after this last shooting and they said, hey, what do you got on him? Oh, we have nothing. No documents whatsoever, which is very suspicious, meaning they chose to get rid of the records of the person. That just doesn't make much sense unless you're trying to cover something up. But the FBI's warning of these armed protests across the nation has 15,000 National Guard deployed to Capitol. Good. Let's keep that, you know, martial law going, right? All for freedom. Oh, but COVID-19, but now as well as just possible things, right? So it was because we're all in danger of COVID and we need to enforce this and vaccines. And now it's just because things might happen. So let's just keep bringing in military. You see how quickly that just kind of becomes, that's just where we are, right? Now this might happen and tomorrow that might happen. And now we got danger over here. So keep the military. Nothing matters anymore. None of the things we used to pretend, it just, they're all at the door because danger. Because COVID-19 was used under the guise that, well, fear, so these things happen. So now they just get to say, well, here's more fear. Oh, here's some danger. So now we're going to remove that right. But just temporarily, though. Who actually believes that? Police have now barricaded entrances to Twitter's headquarters after reports that a pro-Trump mob is expected to descend into San Francisco following the permanent banning of Trump's... It's just, you know, this is, you know, the idea that this could happen is totally likely. That these people who are now feeling like they're own, that there's a powerful entity that literally stole from them and they're watching the president get censored on Facebook and Twitter. I mean, it wouldn't even be surprising now. That's the point Whitney was making, is that they're trying to radicalize these people so they can use them for the very justification to carry out the things that they're already telling you they want to carry out. But on top of that, you know how easy this would be to just state this? Or even state this and have nothing to back it up and then make something happen? Again, people that are hearing that and going, oh, that's conspiracy theory. You don't understand your own history. Our government, more times than I can talk about on this show, have faked events, created false flags, literally lied to you about entire things happening in order to achieve their goals. Bolivia is one we just talked about. Duma is another one we know as a matter of fact. They have killed people doing this. So if you believe that they wouldn't cause a little bit of destruction out front of Twitter to carry out an agenda, then you're naive. I'm not saying that's what's happening. I'm just saying that with everything up in the air right now, this is like exactly what they want. This is literally what they need. So we should question it. There's a lot of things that we should be questioning in this whole narrative. From the beginning of all of it, every single thing that has happened has led to exactly what they were trying to accomplish. COVID-19 is the obvious example. I don't know how many times we can continue to point out how many of these actions were planned and coordinated and prepped before we got to where we are now. I just saw that Biden is adding somebody from BlackRock on his administration. You know, and there's all these there's so many examples of how these overlapping benefits are revealing themselves. We've talked about the bailout plan for the Treasury. We've talked about the AI plan. We've talked about contact tracing. All these things have been aggressively tried to be pushed forward, and they were pushed back. And now because of what they gave you, because of all this chaos, it is being at least allowed. Right? Because there's a lot more happening, and I argue a lot of people out here really do not want this to be happening. But they're letting it happen, though. Now, why would that be? Why would people be allowing this to happen, even as their rights are being removed? Well, it's because they believe that they're the fringe. They believe that they are the crazy conspiracy theorists because that's what the media told them. They said, well, you're crazy and you're the fringe and nobody, you're the group over there on Parler that's talking about things that we don't agree with. But the reality here, guys, that we need to begin to see is that this is the, I'm not talking about Trump supporters. I'm not talking about anything in regard to the Capitol. I'm talking about people who question the narrative. That is the majority today, and I know that. I know it. It's my opinion. I can't prove that. But I've been seeing this for a long time, a really long time. I've been watching people engage and react and discuss these things, and it becomes very apparent that most people don't speak out because they're afraid of how they think their neighbor will see them, afraid of how they'll be seen by what they are told is the majority. And so they keep quiet. They don't speak out. They act like they don't think what they actually think. But if they did see that they were not alone, were the majority, or at the very least just supported by a huge group of people, they would have more willingness to speak out. That's why it's important for all of you in the chat to actually take time to try to get through to people. As long as you don't get upset, I believe that can keep happening. Like, the point is that people will get mad. You'll tell them, hey, masks don't work, or whatever you want to say. And they will scream and yell and say, you're stupid and crazy. Okay, and then just walk away. But there will be times when you can get through to people. All of this is leading to a very clear direction that they have created, that they have orchestrated, which is the real point of all of this. And that doesn't mean that the entire thing is fake. We don't know that for sure. But I believe, based on the evidence, that this was allowed to happen and that there were people and things that happened in this whole process that they planned. And that's why it is a good time to revisit the election special that Whitney and I did, primarily Whitney's research, pre-planned 2020 election chaos and the new 9/11. Think about how crazy it is that we said this months ago. And even then people were going, oh, you guys are so wrong. Look, nothing happened. It's, you know, it's November 30th and nothing happened, right? It's like, well, we didn't say when. The point is that we were trying to get ahead of the story because we saw where it was going and we knew we would be censored. And guess what? We were right. I'm off Twitter now. My YouTube channel's gone, the main one anyway. But it's a good time to watch this again. We talked about the new 9/11, which is exactly what's happening now. We talked about the war on domestic terror. We talked about how they planned all of this to create this. I even told you what would happen right down to what happened with Trump. Just like with Event 201, it's just become processed for them now to just say, here's what we think will happen, and then pretend like they just got it right over and over and over. It's about social engineering. But if you watch this video, and hopefully all three parts of it, They're long videos, but man, you will be blown away at how much is exactly what has happened and what I think is going to happen. It's pretty crazy. But moving forward, more reliance on the elites is what they want you to think is the best thing to have. And this is actually pretty embarrassing for Washington Post, and or maybe intentional. They do this sometimes where they push the envelope and then pull it back. And that's, there's a reason they do that. But here's what this article actually said. This is extremely dangerous to our democracy. He's making fun of them. Here's what the article actually said. It is time to give the elites a bigger say in choosing the president. So if you don't think that that's going to be taken in a really upsetting way, you're either so incredibly disconnected from the people you're writing for, or you just don't care. And there was a reason you wanted to put that out there. But nonetheless, the point is that it changed. And now here's what it says. Now it's time to switch primary preferences, except the entire article is exactly the same. They even changed the URL, but the article is exactly the same. Here's the article where it says that they were slammed. Changes headline after op-ed calls for elites, or elitists is what we should call them, to have bigger say in choosing the president. So why would they change it then? Do you not believe in what you said? Or are you more concerned about manipulating people's opinions? Also recognize, well, I don't have the, I don't want to use the incognito window to show you, but there's nothing on the article that says anywhere that they changed anything. This is the Washington Post, guys, and it's very apparent that everybody knows they changed it. But yet they don't feel they have to add what everybody knows they're supposed to add. An asterisk that says, we changed this article. Do you not see how clear that is? As I pointed out before, we did it in a time when it wasn't even necessary, but important to be honest. But they don't care. They just changed it to time to switch preference primaries. And what, of course, in the article, they go on to make a clear statement that what we need to do is basically allow the elites to have more power over choosing this because that's better for everybody because this is greater reset. Nonsense. The elitists is what we're talking about. They want to control your lives. But now they also want you to think that that's good for you. We want to give them the power because they know what's best for you. You know, it's 2030 and you owe nothing and you've never been happy. Remember that? Yeah, that's what they want. We owe nothing, but they sure own everything. Crazy. But moving on to the important part of the discussion today, the lockdown. And coming off that exact point, you know, the elitists, here's Gavin Newsom forcefully pushing back on criticisms that California is becoming unfriendly for business. He said, no, that's crazy. We're not unfriendly for business. You know why? He pointed to all the new billionaires created by the initial public offerings, you know, like stocks and everything, and noting that its richest people are doing pretty damn well. What an ass. Are you serious? Like, does he really not know? I'm beginning to think these people really do not understand who they're talking to. Like, they are so completely isolated in their ivory towers on the elitist coastlines that they don't even understand. I mean, is that supposed to be better? We're not in the Reagan trickle-down economics scenario anymore here, buddy. We all know that didn't work. We all know how that the trickle-down didn't trickle anything. You guys just pulled it in a cup and threw it back up on top of yourselves. Like, nobody cared about us down here. And here he is acting like, yeah, because there's billionaires and because, well, the rich people are doing great. You mean the 0.01%? Good times. I'm sure we all care about how well they're doing. This is so crazy to me. But that's the point. They don't care about the small people. As long as Gavin Newsom takes care of the elitists, well, the elitists will take care of him. And here they are saying, well, let's just let him pick president too. That'll work out for everybody. But speaking of lockdowns, because that's what he's talking about. Well, in the lockdowns, all the rich people are doing great. Yeah, big surprise. I wonder why. Well, here is a Canadian expert, or rather Canadian experts' research, that's finding that lockdowns harm, the harm of lockdowns is 10 times greater than the benefits. And I argue that there's probably not many of those, but that's for another discussion. Now, most of this I want to read to you, except for the last part, but this is a really important discussion. I want you to listen to what this guy is saying. Dr. Ari Jaffe, I believe, a specialist in pediatric infectious diseases at Stollery Children's Hospital in Edmonton and a clinical professor in the Department of Pediatrics at University of Alberta. He's written a paper entitled COVID-19 Rethinking the Lockdown Groupthink. Now it's saying, and basically this is an interview. Here's the actual research, as always, so you can read it for yourself. I'm not even going to read this, but it's just basically, it's a summary of what he gets into in the interview, or vice versa. Really, he expands on what he says in this. But November 3rd, Ari Jaffe, you can see here, and so that's included for you to do your research, as everybody should do, and most people don't. I mean, in regard to including the links for you guys, because that's what it really should be about. But he says, were you a strong proponent of lockdowns initially? Or you were, but have since changed your mind. Why? Here's what he says. First, this is the author of the research. Initial data falsely suggested that the infection fatality rate was up to 2-3%. And remember, that came from, guess who? Imperial College. By the way, I just saw another really alarming article that Whitney sent me that we're going to get into in the near future about the brain-machine interface and how it already happened. December 15th. We're already making this and we're building it. It's a new development. And guess what? You dig down and guess who's involved? Imperial College. Just like I've been saying the other day, but I don't want to get too sidetracked. Okay, 2.2-3%, which came from Neil Ferguson, Imperial College, and they were painfully wrong. And yet they're still being pointed to as they continue to get it wrong again and again. But yeah, let's keep pointing to them though, because clear they're going to get it right sometime. Why bank on someone with a better track record? He's gotten it wrong every time, so he'll probably get it right next time. Let's just try to squeeze in logic somehow. The point is they're using it to deceive you. That's what I think. But falsely suggesting that the infection fatality rate was up to 2-3%, that over 80% of the population would be infected, and modeling suggested repeated lockdowns would be necessary. But emerging data showed that the median infection fatality rate is 0.23%. Now remember, that's including the elderly and people that have a much higher rate. That the median infection fatality rate in people under 70 is 0.05%. Now, I was saying this earlier. I believe it's lower even, but the point is, this is not contentious. You can look this up right now. The only reason they keep this number in the middle is because they combine people who are over 70, over 80, where there's an exponential jump in the infection fatality rate. Right? I argue there's much more going on in what's happening in those nursing homes and the intubation and God knows what else. But the point is, under 70 just under 70 in general, then you add on comorbidities and it gets even smaller. The point is, guys, that you can look this up right now. And what that shows you is we're not in a pandemic. That's a period, full stop, end sentence that is verifiable. Even when you use the 0.23%, and I argue again, there's plenty more that shows you that should be way lower, even that is aligned with a severe flu. This is a major deception. But again, I want to make sure we're clear on that this is being stated, and it is easy to look up. Why is that not the end of the discussion? because there's all these hypotheticals, which we'll get to in a minute. Oh, maybe the asymptomatic, or maybe, oh, what about this? What about the long haul COVID? We don't know. Yeah, we don't know a lot of things. Doesn't mean you should destroy everyone's lives until we figure them out. Right? It's just so ridiculous. And to err on the side of caution, to assume that it's going to be more damaging, well, if you did that, we'll always be in this position, which, by the way, is exactly what they're trying to do. But he says, and that the high-risk group is older people, especially those with severe comorbidities. In addition, it is likely that in most situations, only 20 to 40% of the population would be infected before ongoing transmission was limited by herd immunity. You know that thing that the WHO is pretending doesn't happen without vaccines? Here's another doctor clearly telling you that that's a lie. But he goes, second, I am an infectious diseases and critical care physician and am not trained to make public policy decisions. I was only considering the direct effects of COVID-19 and my knowledge of how to prevent these direct effects. So what he's saying is I was listening to what I was told by my superiors, by CDC and FDA and whatever else. Or not FDA, but CDC, HHS, and so on. I was not, he says, considering the immense effect of the response to COVID-19 lockdowns on public health and well-being. So he was doing what everyone was doing in the beginning. Simply trusting authority. Emerging data has shown a staggering amount of so-called collateral damage due to lockdowns. This can be predicted to adversely. This is crazy, by the way. Now, these are predictions, right? Exactly what mainstream won't really make clear when they're talking about other things. This is predictions based on the facts, but predictions nonetheless. This can be predicted to adversely affect many millions of people globally with food insecurity, 82 to 132 million more people, severe poverty, 70 million more people. Now, by the way, these are stated, and there's a lot of research that's already shown that this is happening. These aren't just off the top of his head, understand. Maternal and underage 5 mortality from interrupted healthcare, 1.7 million more people. Look how many people we're talking about. And this is acceptable to stop something that is, that if you're under 70, you've got a 0.05% chance of dying. That's assuming you even catch it, by the way, which adds on a whole other layer. This is ridiculous. Infectious diseases, deaths, and from interrupted services, millions of people with tuberculosis, malaria, HIV, school closures for children, affecting children's future earning potential and lifespan, interrupted vaccination campaigns, which I disagree with, and intimate partner violence for the domestic violence is a huge issue right now. In high-income countries, adverse effects also occur from delayed and interrupted health care, unemployment, loneliness, deteriorating mental health, increased opioid crisis deaths, and more and more and more. Third, a formal cost-benefit analysis of different responses to the pandemic was not done by government or public health experts. Initially, he simply assumed that lockdowns to suppress the pandemic were the best approach, again, which is what most of these people did because they're trained to do so. The fact that this guy's speaking out just speaks to his ability to be objective, even, you know, within all of the propaganda and social engineering from the schools they went to. But policy decisions on public health should require a cost-benefit analysis, especially if they're going to destroy your life, right? Since lockdowns are a public health intervention aiming to improve the population well-being, I argue that's what we're told they're doing, not they're actually doing, in my opinion, we must consider both benefits of lockdowns and costs of lockdowns on the population well-being. Once I became more informed, I realized that lockdowns cause far more harm than they prevent. One doctor, by the way, backed up by a lot of new studies the media is not showing you. My opinion, guys, this is undeniable. Unequivocally, this is causing far more damage. I've had this opinion before I saw this, before I listened to what he had to say, based on the studies and the different information that's been coming out, as well as the fact that I said this, if you remember, right when we got here. Lockdowns are archaic, and the new science shows that they don't work. That's why Iran initially resisted it and said, well, they're archaic, and they got pressured by the rest of the world. The point is that the science clearly backs up, and did before we got here, that lockdowns don't actually do what they think they do. And we're forcefully, just like with the mass discussion, pushing past the propaganda and politicians screaming otherwise with the science. It says, when they ask him again, there has never been a full cost-benefit analysis of lockdowns done in Canada. What did you find when you did yours? First, some background into the cost-benefit analysis. I discovered information I was not aware of before. First, framing decisions as between saving lives versus saving the economy is a false dichotomy. Right? So that's the idea. Well, we're talking about destroying the economy. They go, well, are lives not important? Of course. Same idea. Like, you're killing my grandma. There's no, it's not rational, right? There's this extreme overreach, but he says it's false dichotomy. There is a strong long run relationship between economic recession and public health. This makes sense as government spending on things like healthcare, education, roads, sanitation, housing, nutrition, vaccines, safety, which again, I disagree with, social security nets, clean energy, and other services determines the population well-being and life expectancy. If the government is forced to spend less on these social determinants of health, there will be statistical lives lost. That is, people will die in the years to come. Second, he had underestimated the effect of loneliness and unemployment on the public health. That's really interesting, right? Because no one wants to talk about that, which, I mean, think of how many people are dealing with that right now. He said it turns out that loneliness and unemployment are known to be among the strongest risk factors for early mortality, reduced lifespan, chronic diseases. So again, their actions are leading to more death, more sickness, more problems, just like every other thing they've done throughout this entire situation, just like I keep pointing out. So again, you need to start wondering whether there's something else being decided here. And it doesn't mean everybody making these decisions, like this doctor, are involved with it. They just do what their authorities say. Well, the CDC says, and they go, okay, we're in a pandemic, we got to listen. But the problem is that there's directions that obviously, the whole Build Back Better, Greater Reset, guys, that was obviously already planned. That's not my opinion. It's easy to find. Look it up. This was something that was already being developed and planned and discussed. Okay. So the point is, this is a discussion about rebuilding our society. We also know that they're adamant about the idea of overpopulation, about the idea of resources. Okay. So now we're at a point where it seems like their direction and their actions are directly reducing, or rather just diminishing, the parts of the population that are problematic, that are sucking resources from some of the system. The elderly, the comorbidities, even if people would add the eugenics aspect, the minorities. All of this is being directed at all of them. And as we see them continuing to, as it says right here, their loneliness and unemployment are adding to the risk factor, early mortality, reduced lifespan, chronic diseases, which is beneficial to every single thing we're talking about, to their profit motive. As well as the fact that do you really believe? I mean, I could go off on so many things with this, but guys, the reality is this is adding to the problems. And I believe that there is a level involved in this agenda that is actively trying to do just that. Whether you want to call it, eugenics, reducing the population. I mean, the idea that's been stated numerous times that we need to. The population bomb and all these different discussions of things that it's sort of like climate change, where it's like every, 10 years from now, we're all going to be overwhelmed with people, and it doesn't happen. And then I go, 10 years from now, it's going to happen. And we're going to be overwhelmed with too many people. It doesn't happen. I'm not saying there's not an issue with what we're dealing with here, but it is not what we're being told it is. And it's being used against us. Now, it says third, in making policy decisions, there are trade-offs to consider, cost and benefits. And we have to choose between options that each have tragic outcomes in order to advocate for the least people to die as possible. Right? In this case, you can very clearly argue that what they did caused more to die and continue to do so, almost as if that's what they want to happen. In the cost-benefit analysis, I consider the benefits, he says, of lockdowns in preventing deaths from COVID-19 and the cost of lockdowns in terms of the effects of the recession, loneliness, unemployment on population well-being and mortality. He says he did not consider all of the other so-called collateral damage of lockdowns mentioned above. It turned out that the costs of lockdowns are at least, according to him and his research, 10 times higher than the benefits. And again, I have this for you to go so you can actually look at the data. That is, lockdowns cause far more harm to population well-being than COVID-19 can. One medical expert's opinion. It is, and by the way, not one, there's a lot of them coming out and saying this, but in this case, it's one expert's opinion. It is important to note that I support a focused protection approach. The Great Barrington declaration is probably what he's talking about. But and whether it's that aligned with that or not, he's just simply saying what they're saying. We should focus on the elderly, the people that are most at risk, and allow people elsewhere to make their own choices and go back to their lives. He says where we can aim to protect those truly at high risk of COVID-19 mortality, including older people, especially those with severe comorbidities and in nursing homes. Right. The very people that they're forcing this on first, yet they haven't tested it properly. I'll show you that in a minute. He says, you studied the role of modeling played in the shaping public opinion. That's actually interesting. Break it down for us. He says, I think that the initial modeling and forecasting were inaccurate. Yeah, that's an easy guess now. We all know it was very clearly. He says, this led to a contagion of fear and policies across the world, which is important to think about. This is the idea that people go, how can so many people be involved with this big? I argue that most people are trained to follow, even leaders. You know, quote unquote leaders, right? The leaders of these different countries are following people. The real rulers of the world, in my opinion, the multifaceted sort of, you know, unelected power structure out there of billionaires and companies and intelligence agencies, whatever you want to call it, it's, you know, undefined. The point is these figureheads, the Trumps and Bidens, are not really the people pulling the strings. That's my opinion, but I think that's painfully obvious today. But what I'm saying is that this level and the way this is put together and has been designed over the decades, they just simply trickle down information and people react like he did. I mean, look, he's an expert and he reacted and he's admitting now looking back that he was wrong. And it all led simply because of trust in authority. So this led to a contagion of fear and policies around the world where people assumed they were being told this. Well, we got that sample from China. We can just and if we test that against what we're seeing and that says positive, well, there you go. Not even counting PCR tests that are false positives or the fact that this thing is coming from China or something that hasn't actually been proven to be what we're talking about and on and on and on and on. All right, we've talked about all of these things. And the point is that people simply do what they're told, right? They simply react and go along to get along. Popular media focused on absolute numbers of COVID-19 cases and deaths independent of context, which of course is important. They know that. But if they, you know, say, let's look between, you know, these specific dates between these times, between noon and three, and oh my gosh, look at this huge spike. They know how to game the numbers. They do it every day. There has been a sheer one-sided focus on preventing infection numbers. The economist Paul Fridgers, I think that's a J, Fridgers, wrote that it was, quote, all about seeming to reduce risks of infection and deaths from this one particular disease, to the exclusion of all other health risks or other life concerns. Right. Does that make any sense at all? No. And he said fear and anxiety spread, and we elevated COVID-19 above everything else that could possibly matter. Our cognitive biases prevented us from making optimal policy. We ignored hidden statistical deaths, reported at the population level. We preferred immediate benefits to even larger benefits in the future. We disregarded evidence that disproved our favorite theory and escalated our commitment in the set course of action. Yes, exactly. That is why everybody went along. That's the point. It says, I found out that in Canada in 2018, there were over 23,000 deaths per month and over 775 deaths per day. That's just in general in 2018. In the world in 2019, there were over 58 million deaths and about 160,000 deaths per day in general in 2019. This means that on November 21st this year, COVID-19 accounted for 5.23% of deaths in Canada and 3.06% of global deaths. Each day in non-pandemic years, over 21,000 people die from tobacco use, 3,600 from pneumonia and diarrhea in children under 5 years old, and 4,110 from tuberculosis. His point is, we need to consider the tragic COVID-19 numbers in context. And whenever you do that, people try to act like you're downplaying it because it's emotion. Emotion comes into it. Context is not emotional. When somebody starts screaming about how you don't care about their grandma after you state stats, you know why. The point is, the context matters. And the reality that this is as dangerous, I mean, I just showed you the numbers. But then when you realize what it actually compares to other people that are dying from other things right now, it doesn't make sense. And again, it shows you from another angle that we're not in a pandemic. He says, I believe that we need to take an effortful pause and reconsider the information available to us. Exactly. That's an important thing to think about. He says, we need to calibrate our response to the true risk, make rational cost-benefit analysis of the trade-off, and end the lockdown groupthink. Right? This is so important. This reliance on the information from authority. Right? This goes back to the very beginning of this whole thing. We were just talking about the Chinese sample, right? That this is a sample scraped in China that's then used as the justification for everything we're dealing with here. We have the FDA and the CDC in different documents claiming they don't have qualified isolates. We have different suggestions of this all across the board. We have all kinds of people pointing this out. And yet, because people want to be reliant on what they're told is the truth or information from authority, because they have a study that says this happened there, but doesn't really say anything to prove it. You know, the point is people are reliant on the information from authority figures. And as he says, we need to take an effortful pause and reconsider the information available to us. But the problem is these people out there don't want to do that, right? The CNNs and Fox News, they don't care about reevaluating information. They just want to keep pushing out what they believe is the truth or what they were told to say is the truth. In any case, an effortful pause is the last thing we're going to see from them. But as he asks, again, has already been going down the lockdown path for many months. What should be done now? How do we change course? He says we need to better educate ourselves on the risks and trade-offs involved and alleviate unreasonable fear with accurate information. We need to focus on cost-benefit analysis. Repeated or prolonged lockdowns cannot be based on COVID-19 numbers alone. But that's what's happening. We should focus on protecting people at high risk. We need to keep schools open because children have very low morbidity, mortality. Right. I mean, zero, exactly. Right. It's like 0.00001. According to the CDC, it still says zero. In fact, it still says zero under 50, by the way. The point is we're not really in something we're being told we're in. That's the point. 10 times greater. This is your wobbly bookcase or tripod we were talking about, right? If we know that the death rate, that the actual risk to you under 70 is basically inconsequential. And we know that the PCR test has a huge prevalence of false positives, and that's what's being used to claim we even have what we have. And we know they're combining pneumonia and influenza with the COVID death numbers, which is a guarantee to dramatically inflate them. And we know that death certificates are being added that shouldn't be, and on and on and on. And then you add in the lockdowns themselves are in fact causing more problems. And then you add on the fact that the masks themselves are in fact adding on more problems. I mean, what isn't adding that, right? What action have they taken is leading to a positive result? As always, this is the solution being worse than the problem. And that was probably the point. That was the plan. Just so unbelievable. But nonetheless, we have plenty of other places continuing to lockdown. We have plenty of locations continuing to keep people on lockdown based on nothing in some cases. We have discussions of hospital overflow. We have discussions of, there are places that have zero cases and yet they're continuing to stay on lockdown because of possible dangers, right? This is what we keep telling you about. The idea that there are possible dangers. So there's always possible dangers. Right? There's always a possibility that something could happen, but now it's gotten to the point to where just the hypothetical potential of risk is enough to keep you on lockdown. Do you not see that this is never going away? It's just, this is meant to be here forever. What we need is we just need to eventually wrap our mind around how clearly that is what's happening. Now, this is going to go in a direction that's going to get worse. I mean, I feel that in my bones. I feel that this is going to continue to get more intense and get more problematic unless we stop it, unless we do something. Now, obviously and repeatedly, I am never calling for violence. That's the last thing I support. Now, as I always say, there's plenty of times when it's necessary, when you're being attacked, when your family's being attacked, when you're defending your property. But at the same time, when we're going into, like, take the Capitol, for instance, right? I think Derek pointed this out. I think it was a tweet that he had, a comment that he shared. Think of all the energy and the manpower and the people. You know what could have been done if that was harnessed in the right way and not led by people that had nefarious intentions? We need to be able to do that going forward because things like this are going to continue no matter what. This is Brisbane you're looking at, lockdown. And they're going to, as I just said, extend it or could be extended despite recording no new cases for multiple days, multiple consecutive days. And just because, and remember, that's including all the other things we just pointed out, but just because maybe we're going to keep these people on lockdown, which they shouldn't be allowed to do. They're not allowed to do. They just have power, so they're doing it anyway. That's where we are. And don't forget that all these people, and these are all new examples I'm going to show you, by the way, three of them, I think, all these people that are saying, oh, you need to be on lockdown because you're going to kill us all. As this says, COVID-19 doesn't give a flying F about Christmas. Piers Morgan, Mr., you know, so pontificating. I can't think of the right word for that. Just bloviating. Like, he's so sure of himself and I'm so right and you're so wrong. And then he flies to Antigua for Christmas. How many times do we need to see these fake people scream you down about doing what's right for everybody and then literally do what he just told you not to do? Why? Because he's not you. In his mind, he is above you. You're part of the peon class. He's part of the elitist class. So he can do that. He's screaming about you gross peasants down there. You got to make sure you don't spread this thing. I'm going to fly off to Antigua because I'm clean and I'm in the elitist class, so it's okay. I mean, I'm just being facetious, guys, but it's right there in front of you. Just like with Gavin Newsom, we did it and said, oh, I'm so sorry. And then kept locking people up for breaking the rules. And then Dr. Birx did it and didn't care and just quietly went away. And on and on and on. Every one of the most vocal of these people have been caught breaking the rules. Why? Because none of them are doing it. Only you are. Wake up and see that. They have put you here, not themselves. I mean, there are more examples than I can even get to. Council boss issues stay-at-home warning while on holiday in the Maldives. Here's the Daily Mail. Wish you were here, council boss. Stay-at-home warning while on a paradise island. I mean, it just couldn't get more ridiculous. Do you think he mistakenly tripped over his shoelaces and fell on a plane? Oops, my mistake. Well, I'm already here. Right? No, he consciously told you couldn't do something and then consciously went out and did that thing because he is bigger and better than you. He is above you. He is not bound by the same rules and laws that you are or mandates and assertions that you are, right? Even though we're not. That's the point. They are the elitists. They can do what they want and they're just getting caught and they're going to go, oh, I'm so sorry. It was a mistake. I didn't mean to. And then just keep doing what they're doing because people are too pacified to stand up and go, okay, that's it. That's enough. How many people? This one really is going to bother you. Corey Morningstar doing a fantastic job, by the way. There we go. Corey Morningstar. Oh, by the way, yeah, this account, Ignitus Riley, you guys should follow that account. Who that is? Corey Morningstar. Over the past 3 to 4 months, the wealthy have spent millions building their own secret clubs and live music venues and then flying in musicians to perform and perform their own version of a live entertainment, right? So they're breaking every possible rule. And I guarantee you plenty of people know about that. You don't make $1 million secret club and live music venues and have musicians fly in without having everybody everywhere know about it. The plane you flew the people in, the people on the plane, the people that are securing the plane, people are very aware, and they don't care. Why? Because they're wealthy and they're rich and they have power, so they don't bother them. But those people sitting on the bench just because they want to get outside for once in the last 8 months, well, they're being arrested, put in handcuffs. But don't worry about the wealthy who are doing whatever they want. Now, look, I'm not arguing that these people or anybody should be, you know, restricted because we are. Obviously, that's not what I'm saying. The point is they have the means. Go, fine, do it. I would do it if I could. But the point is that they're not being accountable the same way we are. I'm talking about the government and the accountability. If it was really about worrying people were getting sick, well, they would jump in and stop this because they're spreading it and it's good as ever. Well, they're going to spread it just like anybody else could, but that's obviously not what's happening because these people are elitists. They're not bound by the same rules you are. That should really upset you, especially for those of you out there that have personal experiences where your family was arrested or somebody was attacked or, you know, any number of things. As they party in their massive, rich, secret parties with their flying in musicians. And I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. It says this summer was one of sporting fixtures canceled, concerts postponed, and national borders closed, meaning little live entertainment for anyone except for those who could afford their own. Again, I'm not begrudging them having the money to do so. What I don't like is that there's no doubt in my mind that there is somebody at some point in an official position, police, whatever else, that's very aware that's happening. And they don't care. But if you were on the beach right there watching them. Well, you're going to come get arrested because you can't. Well, the beach and the spray might spread the, like in California, right? I mean, it's that's how ridiculous this is. Over the past 3 to 4 months, the wealthy have spent millions building their own secret clubs and live music venues and flying the musicians in and performers for their own version of the live entertainment. It says, quote, on the yacht is much more fun, says Bjorn Dedecker, who booked an opera singer to perform on his yacht for his wife's birthday while cruising Sardinia's Costa Smeralda. Quote, attending an opera now and just sitting there with the mask on, no thank you. I agree. Now, obviously, when you're on the open, you know, you're out in the ocean, maritime law and all that, but this is not just about one boat. This is about things that are being built in general, that are there, present, stagnant, that are stationary, that are being used, and people are being flown in, and they're singing, and they're doing this in, you know, probably of their own security and so on, but everybody knows it's happening and nobody stops it. Quote, they have a helipad that can convert into a nightclub, right? So it's this again, not, oh, this is on the boat actually, with a state-of-the-art Bang & Olufsen sound system with smoke machines and with the DJ equipment. So that's normal. That's nothing special, he says. But you want to dig through this for yourself. Alicia Keys was one that got flown out, right? Everyone knows what's going on. They're rich, so no one cares. You are the ones that they worry about, because it's not about being rich, or excuse me, not about being healthy or stopping disease. It's about controlling the, you know, the masses. These are not the masses. You are the masses, at least in the eyes of the controllers. And here's the point. As these people are partying on their yachts and their secret clubs with Alicia Keys singing at their parties and opera singers, well, as Eva Bartlett points out today in fascism, I was sitting on a bench having coffee and she gets arrested. I can't believe that people are allowing this to happen around them, being okay with this.
Today, in the town centre and around here, and walking up and down the thing. That's not one
exercise.
Okay,
in the town centre.
No, we can go ahead. This is what you want to see, but I'm going to tell you what it is. Section 50, so in the uniform Act 2002, okay? If a constable in uniform has reason to believe that a person has been acting or is acting in an antisocial manner, you may require
antisocial manner. Am I acting in an antisocial manner?
What's antisocial? Listen to me, that he may require that that person give him his name and address, okay? Any person who fails to give his name and address when required to give under subsection gives a false or inaccurate name is guilty of offence, okay?
Are they acting unsociably? And I was sat on a bench having a cup of coffee. That is not antisocial. Well, because yes, you're provoking me.
You literally are.
Are you going to give us your details or not?
No.
Walk over to the other group. Oh, look at that. Simultaneously. Here's another group on a bench being arrested.
What's going on?
Why are you putting your hands behind her back? What are you doing?
I was sitting on a bench.
What the hell are you doing to this woman?
You are breaking your own laws.
Right, this is what I say every time. So it's okay to do the thing they claim spreads the virus in order to stop her from doing the thing they claim spreads the virus. So at a basic concept here, if you're really all about stopping this thing, if that's what they're really doing, then the right thing to do would be nothing, because, or at least walk up and give her a ticket and walk away or whatever you want. But the engagement with her, and none of that's what I'm arguing, the engagement with her is literally the violation itself. She was by herself, right? So we think about how it's about compliance. It always has been. You're not allowed to sit in a bench these days.
Justin, what are you doing? What is this poor woman doing? You've got to choose your side.
Right. And really, think about how crazy it is that you, like, does she need to be handcuffed? Like, that's just what happens now, right? The whole point is it used to be, like, you know, you could be arrested or something, or, you know, be charged with something. If it's not a violent crime, the idea wasn't that you didn't used to be restrained. This is a woman sitting on a bench in a public square, and she gets handcuffed for sitting on a bench by herself.
Why are her hands behind her back? Are you sorry?
No, you're not going to arrest me for having a coffin.
This is disgusting, guys.
You are in breach of your own regulations.
Choose your side. choose your side. Look at them. There's hardly any of us here.
Hardly cops any. Everywhere.
Talk about fucking freedom of speech, people. Fucking tyranny. Fucking tyranny, I'm telling you.
Sorry about the cuss words.
Get worse, guys. Oh my Mark God. My words.
They'd already decided to find them before they even got there as well.
Come on. Bastards. Like.
Crazy. I mean, if you don't see that this is a war on you, then you're not paying attention. It's everywhere. Everywhere. Now, here are some people resisting. And this is how the cops, you know, make sure they know that it's all about making them safe, you know. And it says, Denmark, the longer this one goes on, the bigger the crowds become. The resistance only just begun. These are people that are protesting lockdowns, right? Now, as I understand it, these things almost always, especially in Denmark, the ones I've been seeing, are starting in a way that is protesting. And they get engaged by the police. And just like we see in the United States, create the violence that they then use to justify shutting everything down. Here's what's happening. First of all, make sure we're clear that guy's back was to the cop, right? That guy's back is to the cop. And he's just wailing on him. Why? Because he dares to think he can go outside. Meanwhile, they're all breaking their own rules, as always, right? But it doesn't matter. It's about compliance. Look at that guy. Look at that. Guy bleeding from the head. Yeah, no big deal. You know, we're keeping you safe, buddy. We're keeping you safe from the virus. We'll knock you in the head. I just want to show you that, so, you know, they push them back and the people, they're there, they're standing back, right? So it's dissipated, but then the point is they re-engage. It's about removing them, right? So it's not about, you know, you don't have a right to do these things anymore. You don't have a right to protest anymore. Being there is a crime. That's what's already happening. Just like with the Capitol thing. Now, as Whitney pointed out on another discussion, that you now think about like the idea of like a sit-in, like used to be a classic concept of the civil rights movement. Now, that's domestic terrorism, right? You can't, now you can't, how dare you come in this federal building that our tax dollars pay for, by the way? How dare you? Now, again, that's not to say that somebody going in there and breaking a window, that person has, there's already book laws in the books. You don't need to make some new whole legislation to charge that person who did something wrong that's already a crime. But the point is, this whole concept has now made any idea of protesting, at least on sides that they don't like, as being terrorism, right? As I pointed out the other day, there were four incidences of Black Lives Matter. I think it was Antifa, an Antifa protest that ended up being violent, right? Where there were people out there that were, they broke into a police station and so on. Apparently there've been four of them since New Year's Eve. Where's all the reporting on that? Yes, it's a Capitol building. I get that. It's different, but it doesn't change the fact that there's zero conversation about it, right? And all of them, as always, there are protests. There are people that are there to fight for what they believe in. It's the people that end up being violent that should be the crime or the criminal, right? If you're going to play it one way, you got to be objective and fair. Same thing with them. You can't be like, oh, Antifa terrorists. Yes, I do believe that there's obvious manipulation happening in that, just like we saw on the other side. But there are, on all sides, people that are just either being manipulated or believe what they're saying and are there by their own accord. Those people are not criminals unless they commit a criminal act. It's just so frustrating. I know, again, this is my point before. I'm not talking to all you guys in the chat. I know all of you know this stuff. The people out there that are, and by the way, there's a lot of people that watch this show that are on the fence, that don't believe everything we're saying. And the point is, it's frustrating that that conversation needs to be had a lot. Broad brushes used to be very obvious, but today that's mainstream media. That's all they do. But as he pointed out, remember though, folks, this is all about keeping people safe. Look at those police beating people for their own good. This is really funny. Twitter's been doing this lately. Every time I reload this tweet, that's what happens. And you have to reload it again for it to actually show up. Oh no, I didn't that time anyway. But see, you click on it. It's still there. Tweet's still there. Where was it? Oh, that's why I went forward. And now it shows up when you go back. That's what it was. But when you first look at it, it says it's not available. And that this is what they didn't want you to see. This shot of the riot, police beating people up. So why, Twitter, are you blinking that out as if it's not there when it really is there? And that happens every time without fail. If you load it again, it'll be the same way. Why? It's because they're trying to restrict what you see. How is that not obvious by now? But remember, though, it's all for you. It's all for keeping you safe as they beat that guy in his head. Here is, in Italy, civil disobedience, lockdown, curfews. These are people that are living their lives. But wait a minute. How can that be happening what we're told is, yeah, obviously. If this is happening anywhere, it shows you that it's not really what we're being told. And I mean consecutively, right? Not one night, but the idea of places like Sweden, St. Petersburg, Italy, for example, there was plenty of play. This is an ongoing reality. Yes, there's a guy with a mask, a couple of them, but by and large, most of them are not. By and large, people are out, living their lives, going to restaurants, going to, you know, on and on and on. And I'm mostly talking about Sweden. But the fact is, this is there. And places like Sweden, where it's mostly happening, shows you, and St. Petersburg, for example, we just showed you one of those, that these people are not dropping dead everywhere. Why? Because, well, most of them only have a 0.05% chance anyway, and that makes perfect sense. It's all an illusion they're trying to sell you on, unless they keep you fearful, you begin to recognize that it's very flimsy. Here's Michael Yeadon again pointing out that it's a postcard from Luxembourg. Normality is restored prior to vaccination. It's repeatedly stated that test is madness. If the tests are unregulated, why? Exactly. Right? A test that's completely, now they're doing their own cycle threshold, and we know they're using one that guarantees false positives, which guarantees they can claim they're in more of a severe situation without really having it, so they can call for more funding. They all know what's happening, whether they admit it or not. Because pandemic, no PCR mass testing has declared an operational false positive rate. And he goes on a lot about the PCR, but I wanted to show you this postcard from Luxembourg. Oh, I had something. Oh, it's just the beginning, I think. It says, the day before England woke up to its third lockdown, Luxembourg announced that it was actually going to relax its own restrictions. All shops will be open, children back at school, right? But life seems to be going on. How can that make sense? It only makes sense if you realize that you're being lied to. Here's Belarus. As of the 10th. Maybe one mask I've seen so far. People walking around, going to restaurants, going to the bar, living their lives. Remember when that used to be something you could do? Living your life, doing things, going out, dancing, clubs, going to the beach. Remember that? It was nice. Freedom, right? Some semblance of freedom, right? This is what they want you to think is not possible, as there's a countless examples of very much being possible. It's just people are so afraid and willing to toe the line that they don't even want to look at this because it has to be fake news because I'm going to die because they told me so. Everywhere. But don't worry, though. I must be wrong because the Weather Channel makes sure you know that coronavirus cases come from asymptomatic spread. Most of them, though. Thank you, Weather Channel. I'm sure glad the Weather Channel is pushing propaganda for COVID-19 now. Does that make any sense? They're desperate is why it makes sense. But here's the point. CDC is now saying that asymptomatic spread is, in fact, where most of it comes from. Why are they saying that now? Based on seemingly no new information? Because they're desperate. Because this is the linchpin to one of the biggest lies. Without the asymptomatic illusion, there's literally no justification. The lockdown stopped being justified after they realized that the numbers were wrong. But they kept it because they said, well, we don't know, though. Asymptomatic spread is possible, and we don't know who may have it, so we have to stay locked down. That was actually the justification, 15 days to flatten the curve, and then we just ended up doing it forever. But As according to the New York Post, more than half of COVID-19 cases spread by asymptomatic carriers. Oh, CDC model shows. Oh, I guess the Weather Channel forgot to make that clear. But here's the point. A new model from the CDC, a model, because we know how well that's worked for us so far, shows that those who are infected but show no signs of COVID-19 account for more than half of them. Oh, well, that's interesting. I wonder how they came to that conclusion. If only we could look at the actual study and read what it says. Let's take a peek. So here is what they're pointing to. And when you read even barely into this, you find out that this is the point I was making earlier. This is an assumption of an assumption on top of an assumption. I'm not even making that up. This is what they're using to swear to you. And here's what this is the point. This is what most people see. CDC, colon, most cases come from this. Oh my gosh. Well, I'm not going to watch the video. I'm in a hurry. So I'll just assume that's the case, right? This is what's going to happen. Even this barely gets in. There's nothing. It just says CDC says cause model danger. But here's what it actually says. Here's the findings. In this decision analytical model, which is basically just an analytical model that they are using to direct decision making for policy. That's what it means. Assessing multiple scenarios for the infectious period and the proportion of transmission from individuals who never had COVID-19 symptoms, transmission from asymptomatic individuals was estimated to account for more than half. So based on our model, that's their finding. So let's find out more about what this says. Again, just to clearly show you, it's based on a model. Here's the results, and I hope you laugh out loud when you hear this. The baseline assumptions for this model. Okay, so before we even get into the model itself is based on assumptions. Is that clear so far? Cool. The baseline assumptions for the model were that peak infectiousness occurred at the median of symptom onset. So I guess just pull that out of somewhere. And that the 30% of individuals with infection never develop symptoms and are 75% as infectious as those who develop symptoms. Okay, so that's an assumption. So based on these complete out of nowhere assumptions that are backed up by nothing but their certainty about what they think they already know, we're then going to build a model on those assumptions and then use what we find from that model to claim that this is the case. Science, right? I can't even believe this is what has become of scientism. The science and fact are on our side. And so all they can do is theorize about things they're assuming and then go, look, 50% of them based on our assumption we use to make a model. Let me just read it again so we can get it in one fluid paragraph here. The baseline assumptions for the model were that peak infectiousness occurred at the median of symptoms onset and that 30% of individuals with infections never develop them. Symptoms. We assume that. We just assume. The whole study is about finding out whether asymptomatic transmission happens and you assume that 30% of people are asymptomatic. That is like guaranteeing that the whole thing rests on your assumption that it's present. And then you're finding that it is present and it started with your assumption that it was present. I mean, this has to be one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in my life. I really mean that. This is crazy stupid. So they assume that 30% of individuals with infection never develop symptoms, and they assume on top of that, that 75% of them are as infectious as those who develop them. So that's an assumption on top of an assumption on an assumption. That's not a joke. Combined, these baseline assumptions imply that persons with infection who never develop symptoms, so it's all assumed, even that, may account for an approximately... I can't even read this with this dry. The baseline assumptions imply that the persons with infections who never develop symptoms may account for approximately 24% of all transmissions. So your assumptions may imply something. Do you see how far away we are from any actual facts? Your assumptions may imply approximately 24%. Good God. It says in the base case, it was all based on assumptions, by the way, 59% of all transmission came from asymptomatic transmission. Based on your guesses, and then you modeled those guesses? Yes. Comprising 35% from pre-symptomatic individuals, based on guesses, and 24% of individuals who never developed symptoms. Under a broad range of values for each of these assumptions, at least 50% of new SARS-CoV-2 infections was estimated to have originated from exposure to individuals with infection but without symptoms. So that garbage dumpster fire of a guess becomes more than half of these cases are from asymptomatic, which boils it down to basically that's the case without not even model says. That's just unbelievable to me. And I'm the conspiracy theorist. Well, here's the reality. And really the most important one, which is based on over almost 10 million people, is next. But here's another one. Has the evidence of asymptomatic spread of COVID-19 been significantly overstated? This is another. This is by Dr. Claire Craig, FRCP. I'm not familiar with that. And Jonathan Engler. Now it says, and by the way, this, you can read this for yourself. It's all the same thing. This is a study about the whole thing. It says, evidence of asymptomatic transmission has been based on only a handful of instances, which themselves are questionable. Great. The existence of transmission of SARS-CoV-2 from asymptomatic individuals has become an accepted truth, but the evidence for this phenomenon being anything other than mistaken interpretation of false positive test results is weak. Hopefully you'll read this whole thing for yourself, as I did. Across the studies reviewed, a total of 7 instances suggestive of asymptomatic transmission were identified. That's it. 7 suggestive incidences. It says, in Italy, 2 asymptomatic cases allegedly passing the virus on to 2 others. Allegedly, so not even verified. In Brunei, 2 asymptomatic cases allegedly passing the virus on to 3 others. And in China, 2 asymptomatic cases allegedly passing them on. So none of this was verified, studied, and proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. These were guesses at the beginning that have now been assumed on forward. Notwithstanding the small numbers, these case reports, given undue prominence in papers written by respected authorities, appear to have played a major role in the evolution of lockdown and test and trace strategies adopted by most countries over the past 9 months. That's pretty alarming. Read into it, you'll find that it's all completely backed up. But the point is the larger one in regard to the China study. This studied 10 million people, and almost over 9 million of them ended up completing the study. Now, just to jump to the bottom, just so you can read the point, and I already did a whole show on this, or at least a whole segment on this. Here's the discussion. It says, the citywide nucleic acid screening of SARS-CoV-2 infection in Wuhan recruited nearly 10 million people and found no new confirmed cases with COVID-19. The detection rate of asymptomatic positive cases was very low, and there was no evidence of transmission from asymptomatic positive persons to traced close contacts. There were no asymptomatic cases, positive cases in 96.4% of the residential communities. Now, understand what they're saying. I think what the number was, I had it up, it was about 300 or so, if I'm remembering correctly. I don't want to take too long. I thought I remembered it, but anyway, the point is almost nothing. Yeah, right, it was right there at the top. So basically 300 asymptomatic out of 10 million people, right? So the point is it's basically non-existent, but then even then those people that they decided were asymptomatic, and in most cases those are people that were actually eventually going to become symptomatic and just were hadn't shown them yet, which is quite a different thing than just being generally asymptomatic. The point is they found out that even those 300 people had zero evidence of transmission from asymptomatic positive cases to other people. This is the study. This is the huge study that they're choosing to ignore. By the way, this is confirmed by other smaller studies as well, but they also don't want to talk about it. Why? Because the concept of the unknown is what's being used. The idea that everybody around every corner could possibly be someone sick is the whole point, because that creates the illusion of the necessity for the biosecurity state that they've already built. It doesn't exist the way they want you to think it does, and it's being used to keep you on lockdown based on CDC models, based on assumptions that are based on assumptions that are based on assumptions. Their assumption is that this is the case, right? They're assuming that asymptomatic are doing what they want you to think it does, and then using that model to say, well, then that means there's 50% of them, though. This is literally insulting to our intelligence. And as RT says about it, no evidence that asymptomatic COVID cases were infectious, which is the point. None. As this article points out, the big lie about asymptomatic transmission of SARS-CoV-2, the media lie that 40% to 50% of SARS-CoV-2 transmission is from asymptomatic people, with the fact checkers facilitate the deception. And that's why I wanted to read you this, just show you the point. basically, they're saying this is false. And the CDC knows that it's false. But it says they must understand that when they claim this, they know that the New York Times and Washington Post, they'll all happily regurgitate it without any more information. And which, by the way, they did. And so the point is, in truth, the scientific evidence indicates that asymptomatic transmission is rare. People who become infected with SARS-CoV-2 but never develop COVID-19 appear not to be a major contributing factor in the community spread of COVID-19. Okay? It says the CDC also knows that when it produces false claims like this one about asymptomatic transmission, it is not going to be fact-checked by the media's self-proclaimed fact-checkers, right? We know that. Articles like the one from New York Times that repeat the false claims, which are very clearly false claims, are not going to get flagged by Facebook or other social media for spreading misinformation, which it very clearly is. And users who share the misinformation are not going to be then penalized in social media algorithms or have their account suspended for sharing what is very clearly misinformation. Why? Because it's part of the right side of their narrative. They are the ones telling you things they need you to listen to. And as long as you parrot what they're saying, you can do whatever you want. It doesn't matter how flagrantly wrong it turns out to be. You will never be fact-checked and censored if you're going along with the main narrative, despite how many times they turn out to be wrong. They know that, and that's why they keep going. And also, this is just, I just had to point this out. As we're sharing this, another police car siren blaring, driving through residential neighborhoods with the sole purpose of terrifying the public into submission. A far greater infringement of civil liberties than the FLQ crisis 50 years ago in Canada. But just look at this, guys. I mean, that is a cop car driving, what, 5 miles, 10 miles an hour through a neighborhood with their sirens on in the night in order to scare people into staying home. That's what we're doing now. I mean, yes, it's Canada, but the point is the same. I mean, this is the reality that they are scaring you. As it says, terrifying the public into submission. Why does anybody think that's okay? Well, if you believe the lies and, well, we're all about to die and this is just scary. We're willing to lie to scare you into your house because that's what's better. Oh, you conspiracy theorists don't know what's going on, right? You're rationalizing horrible things because the government has convinced you so. This is propaganda, right? This is social engineering. I mean, there's a lot of things you could call this. It's wrong at the end of the day. Now, to finish, well, maybe not, as this thing's freezing up on me, but we're going to finish today, if it goes through, to talk about, it's weird that the siren is still playing, but it's frozen, that's funny, but we're going to talk about, if this comes through, to talk about the side effects of these vaccines that we are seeing, most definitely. There's quite a bit of these vaccine side effects that are, I mean, it's almost unnerving how many are happening and how little discussion is being given. And it's simply because, it's funny, I can't even mute it now. It's simply because the media is open about worrying about vaccine hesitancy. And I said this right in the beginning, right? The idea is that vaccine hesitancy is the problem. Even if truth is causing it, right? So they will stop or they will refuse to show you the truth if they believe it will cause vaccine hesitancy. They've all but said exactly that. Here's another example. Now, I thought about this today. I tried to look. I don't think I've actually shared this one yet. 5 days ago. So it's possible that I've already shown you this, but nonetheless, it builds into the next point. This is in case you haven't seen it. And by the way, I've shown at least 8 or 9 examples so far of pretty public cases of people dying, like right after getting this. Doctors, healthy people, on and on. Norway probing death of 2 people who received Pfizer's vaccine. Norway launched a probe into the death of 2 nursing home residents who died after receiving COVID-19 vaccine developed by Pfizer and BioNTech. It comes after a pediatric surgery assistant in Portugal died. We reported that one 2 days after receiving the vaccine. And there's nothing, all they can do is be like, well, we have no reason to think it's the vaccine, therefore it's not the vaccine. Cool. That's all they're doing, right? No, there's no erring on the side of caution. There's no erring on the side of safety or anything, things they're claiming for COVID-19, right? You get a COVID test for PCR with a high false positive rate, die in a car accident 3 weeks later, they'll call it COVID-19. Well, because we have to err on the side of caution. But if you die within seconds of getting this vaccine and you're over 60, well, he's old, so who cares? not really who cares, but they say he's old, and so people die at that age, and it's probably just one of those deaths. And if we can't prove it was the vaccine, well, then be probably one of those people who died. Or we get four people in one sitting that get Bell's palsy, and, well, because that's the general prevalence of the population, well, it just probably didn't cause the vaccine. They are knowingly playing you. They really think we're this stupid. The problem is they're wrong. It says medical director of Norwegian Medicines Agency Steinar Madsen has said in a statement, quote, "We have to assess whether the vaccine is the cause of death or if it's a coincidence that it happened soon after the vaccination." Now, here's the point. Will we ever hear? If and when they do prove that it was caused by the vaccine and they go, well, this was a random occurrence because of comorbidities and so on, they won't report that. They won't follow up on this article and go, oh, guess what? They died because of the vaccine. Nope. So all we end up hearing is we're going to investigate whether or not, but it's probably not. Every article you'll see about it will always be like that. We're going to look into it, but we don't think there's anything to it. Every single one of them. And you'll never hear more about it unless you dig, which I did today. We'll show you more. He however, noted that as people advanced, this is again the point, see, he goes, we're going to look into it and find out what happened. However, he noted that as people of advanced age are receiving COVID-19 vaccines in the first phase, it's possible that deaths could be coincidental. Of course, that is probably why they started with the elderly, even though they didn't test the elderly in the trials. And by the way, this is still the trial. That's the real point. This is the trial. We're watching the combination phase 1, 2, 3 trials happening in real life. That's what this is. You're getting the vaccine right now. You are part of the safety trial and you're a test subject. That's not even my opinion, guys. That is literally the actual legal fact of what's happening right now. Now, he says earlier, Pfizer Inc. CEO Albert Bourla said that the company is not certain if people who are vaccinated against COVID-19 will be able to transmit the virus. Yeah, if you haven't heard that yet, hear it. Listen, I've said this from the moment these safety trials started, 6 months ago? Because it said it right in the documentation. And it's a bombshell that they said, look, we won't spread. I've been telling you this for months, guys. They never even tried to make it stop transmission. The Tal Zaks from Moderna admitted that they didn't because they didn't get paid enough, because the government didn't want to find out. That's all on record. But if you haven't heard it yet, hear it right here. They don't even know, but yet take it anyway. Take it and go right back to your lockdown. But here's a family calling for more research after a young doctor left paralyzed in the wake of taking Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine. It says an investigation has been launched by public health authorities in Mexico after a young doctor was left paralyzed just minutes after taking the Pfizer vaccine. In the same way, they're trying to downplay it. Well, we don't know for sure. Her family have asked for more research to be carried out. Carla Perez was left partially paralyzed in her arms and legs just hours after receiving the vaccine, the Pfizer biotech vaccine. This is December 30th, and was immediately placed in the intensive care unit of the hospital. She also presented difficulties with speaking, according to media reports. She experienced a number of seizures. This all sounds familiar, right? How many times can we act like, no, this is all just a coincidental thing? How come everyone dealing with this same coincidental thing, it's rare and whatever else they keep saying, all seems to be the same things we see? The seizures, the encephalitis, the swelling of the brain, the spinal cord, all seems to be the constant recurring things we keep seeing with these side effects, as well as rash and weakness and skin breathing difficulties. All of them we've been hearing over and over and over. And every time they say, well, we don't know for sure. And you know what? That's true. We don't know that for sure. But I'm insulted that they won't even pretend to do an actual investigation. She experienced a number of seizures, skin rash, weakness, breathing difficulties, all within half an hour of getting the vaccine. She has since been preliminarily diagnosed with encephalomyelitis, inflammation of the brain and the spinal cord. And we already talked about both of those things in regard to possible side effects of the vaccine. But we don't know for sure. Perez is now in stable condition and is no longer experiencing seizures, but her family has called for additional testing to examine potential hidden side effects of the vaccine. They're not hidden at all, guys. This is very clear, as well as further analysis of her condition to see whether she had any underlying allergies, which may have triggered it. Oh, what do you know? Guess what? She did. Prior to the inoculation, Perez had reportedly experienced adverse allergic reactions to antibiotics, which can cause seizures, skin rashes. And all. So point is, Again, we see the absolute negligence of the very people who are supposed to be doing it. Pfizer made it very clear. Do not take this if you've got allergies. That means these people are supposed to ask, do you have allergies? And if they do, they go, well, you can't take this. But all they do is go, do you have allergies? They go, yes. Do you have an EpiPen? Okay, good. We'll give you the very dangerous rushed injection. That's what's happening. We just showed you the example of a girl who said, yes, I've got a bee pollen allergy. And they go, do you got an EpiPen? She goes, yes. And they gave it to her and she almost died. Why? Because you're not supposed to, you shouldn't be taking this thing anyway, guys. But they're the ones telling you that. They're the ones telling you, we haven't tested for pregnant people. And then you got pregnant nurses going out and virtue signaling and saying, oh, I'm doing this for my baby. What, potentially risking their life? Yeah, you are. And that's terrible. It says, according to the Mexican Public Health Ministry, among all recipients of the Pfizer biotech vaccine in human trials, no cases of encephalitis were recorded. Yeah, you know why? Because we're not done with the trials yet. You did a very small phase one. Phase three is where it's supposed to, is where the real trials happen, and we haven't even gotten there. Right now, you are being tested. That's why there was none recorded. As well as the fact that they didn't test people with comorbidities. They didn't test people that were elderly. They didn't test people with allergies. They didn't test any of this stuff. They all admitted this. And yet, those are the people that we're giving it to. Does that make sense to anybody? It does when you go back to the other point and realize that every choice has led to more problems, more sickness, more damage. Every single one of them. Dr. James Lyon Weiler sent this to me. And this is as of January 1st. Information about the Pfizer biotech vaccine. Guess what it says here now, guys? Look at this. If you have had a severe allergic reaction or an immediate allergic reaction, even if it was not severe. So understand, if you've had an immediate reaction, even if it's not severe, meaning pain, swelling, redness, chills, tiredness, headache. If the point is right away to any ingredient in the mRNA COVID-19 vaccine, you should not get an mRNA COVID-19 vaccine, period. Not just theirs, but none. Do you know how many, most people have gotten some kind of a reaction immediately. Literally everyone we've even seen on these have some kind of a swelling or pain hurts, or their arm hurts. That's an immediate reaction. If you have had a severe allergic reaction or an immediate allergic reaction, even if it was not severe, after getting the first dose of the vaccine, you should not get another dose. So how does this play in if you get in a reaction and then suddenly they start telling you you have to have it to get on the plane or so on? How does that work? The point is, most people won't even read this. Most people won't know about it. Most doctors or nurses won't care about it. It'll be pushed through anyway. It says an immediate allergic reaction means a reaction within 4 hours. Within 4 hours? That's everybody. I mean, if you actually just look at the stats, that's everybody getting vaccinated. I mean, not literally everybody, but the vast majority. Including symptoms such as hives, swelling, wheezing. But guess what? Swelling is one of the most common side effects. So they just said right there that if you get swelling within 4 hours, you shouldn't be doing this. Gosh darn it, man. It says, and this is the most important part, this includes allergic reactions to polyethylene glycol. Suddenly, we're acknowledging what Dr. Lyons Weiler and numerous others warned you about months ago. Months and months and months ago. You know what? I mean, hopefully, there's some kind of a legal action that could be taken here because they were warned. They were told this would happen and they didn't care. They didn't warn anybody. They did it anyway. And it says polysorbate. Polysorbate is not an ingredient in either of the vaccines, but is closely related to PEG, which is in the vaccines. People who are allergic to PEG or polysorbate should not get the vaccine. It says if you have had an immediate allergic reaction, even if it was not severe, to a vaccine or injectable therapy for another disease, ask your doctor if you should get a COVID vaccine. Of course they're going to say yes. People are terrified to act like they don't think this is the best thing since sliced bread. Even doctors. He says, your doctor will help you decide if it's safe to get vaccinated. Yeah, you mean like when you asked about the allergic reactions, like you just said you shouldn't get, and they said, yes, do it? Either they're not listening to the direction, or they don't care. As James said to me in the email when he sent this, or I thought I had it. Oh, yeah, that's right. Here we go. He says, basically, who gets the allergy test? on PEG or polysorbate before injections? Who actually gets these tests to find out whether or not they're allergic? Nobody does. But the point is, he says anybody that would is because they have ethical physicians. So right now, the fact that nobody is getting this test, and they're getting these anyway, and all these reactions are happening anyway, it means that these physicians are not either not are just that bad at their job or not ethical. Don't care. Possibly both. This is since the first, you realize. You know how much, I mean, look, we'll just get right to the point. Oh, dang, it's going to freeze on me. There's been a hell of a lot of reactions. An alarming amount. And that's, I mean, that's since January 1st, right? They're continuing to give this to people with allergies, continuing to give it to people who are pregnant, who are in any number of ways that just don't fully have all the information. Oh, this, I just want to show you this, that polysorbate is a common food additive used in several vaccines as an emulsifier. So it's already been in all these vaccines and people have already been confronted with it. And now suddenly people have all these allergies to it. That's interesting, isn't it? Same thing with like peanut allergies that just came out of nowhere. Suddenly, everyone everywhere has got peanut allergies. Geez, I wonder what that came from. But here's Kerry pointing out some of the most alarming side effects here. And I'll show you the actual page next so you can look at more than just what this clip shows you. But these are really crazy to think about, right? This one says, on the day before Christmas Eve, the resident was sleepy and stayed in bed most of the shift. He stated that he was doing okay, but requested pain medication for his legs. And then it says, at on 2:55 in the morning on Christmas, the resident was observed in the bed lying still, pale, eyes half open, foam coming from his mouth, unresponsive. He was not breathing with no pulse. Doesn't sound like an old person passing away from old age, right? Sounds like some kind of just crazy side effect after getting... Now, this is reported to VAERS, right? The Adverse Reaction Reporting System. That's not the actual acronym. I just said that, but I forget what it was. VAERS, I forget. But that's what this is. It's for people to report what are happening. It is, as it says at the bottom, submitting a report to VAERS does not mean that the healthcare personnel or the vaccine caused or contributed to the reaction. So the person is seeing something, they're reporting it, which means it could be wrong. They could be saying they think this, or it could be something else, but it doesn't mean it's irrelevant. That's what they try to do about all the other side effects that we point out, or the $4 billion paid out in issues from vaccine court. Well, anybody can report anything. Yeah, that's the point. And a lot of this stuff is horrifying. Patient had mild hypertension, decreased oral intake. It says he did have advanced dementia. That wasn't the one. So there's a lot of these are elderly people. But remember, they didn't test on these people, and they're giving it to them first. This one shows it, a resident passed away after getting the vaccine. Grandmother died a few hours after taking the vaccine, the Moderna one. On and on and on. I mean, you can look at these for yourself. They're horrifying. A lot of these are pretty scary. Here is the actual thing you can look. The way the system works is there's a zillion different metrics that you can enter in. So it's almost impossible to find. Some of these things give you such broad information that don't seem relevant, like all the different names. Like, there's basically things that don't attach with like the date or the style of vaccine. It's frustrating. But what I did here was simply the Pfizer as well as the Moderna after one dose with the age included. That's what this is. And you can just simply see right at the top being the most, right? Headache, dizziness, fatigue, nausea, chills, pain. And there's a lot. 655 headache, 578 dizziness. And this doesn't mean that they didn't have some of both. That's why you can see that the percentage is 431, because most of these people had multiple, right? Headache, dizziness, fatigue, nausea, chills, all at the same time. That's why you see that. But just these, you can see the numbers for yourself. It's a lot. And a lot of these are serious, but I just want you to recognize the sheer, how much this is. All these different conditions. 47 of them, you know, just keep going down. Now, death is in here. 6 reported. I argue a lot of people aren't probably talking about or afraid to report this like that other nurse was. Where was it? Oh, did I lose it? There it is. 6. Total 6. Death. So the point is, there's a lot of these things. A lot. All these conditions, all this stuff is happening. All of these things are being reported. Up here is a lot of the big ones, and a lot. Some of these are serious. Here is Moderna, same kind of thing. Same thing, deaths, I think, was 3. Nonetheless, the point is just to realize that there's a lot of this. Now, what she was showing you was a very specific, you know, seeking out. Actually, I'll just go back. That's weird. I just want to show you the main page. Here we go. this is where you go to start this up, just to show you guys. And basically, you end up having to search through a lot of different things, symptoms, and there's a look at all these different things you can pick, and each one of these changes it. Then you go down here and you can change, pick by individual different things, different types of vaccines, and so on and so on, right? It's good for information, but it's very difficult to find exactly what you're looking for. But this will be there for you to look, and hopefully you'll dive in and show me something that I didn't see. But there's a lot, which should immediately make you ask, why isn't the mainstream telling us this? Now, here's another alarming situation that's also being manipulated and downplayed by anybody that's not towing the mainstream line. As she points out, so the nursing home didn't have a COVID outbreak until they were vaccinated. Similarly, remember in Israel, the argument is not that they caught it because of the vaccine, but rather they caught it after getting it. But it's still interesting that hundreds of people got the COVID-19, they claim, after getting the vaccine in Israel. But here is the actual article. COVID-19 outbreak at Auburn nursing home infects 137 residents, kills 24. Okay, January 9th. Now it says the outbreak at the Commons on St. Anthony in Auburn started December 21st. Now, first of all, remember, this is when they're claiming it started, right? And that would mean arguably that they started noticing cases, which could mean a PCR test, which could mean false positives and so on. Just keeping that in mind, December 21st as a wave of post-Thanksgiving COVID cases, again, blaming you for daring to enjoy your family on Thanksgiving. That's what that means. It says there had been no nursing home COVID-19 deaths in this county until the first three deaths at Commons in this specific nursing home were reported December 29th. The three other nursing homes in that area have not reported any COVID-19 deaths. 21st is when they said it started. 29th is when they reported the deaths. Now, jumping down here, you'll find this interesting. The nursing home began vaccinating residents on December 22nd. So far, so just realize what we're saying here, that they began vaccinating them the day after they claimed this started. So the day it started is very easy to point out. It wasn't the day when everything was going crazy and people were dying, right? That's when they first said, okay, somebody's sick. So again, I argue that maybe that could have been nothing more than a false PCR test, or the dates are just being fudged with. But at the end of the day, I find it impossible to ignore that the 22nd they vaccinate, it says so far 193 residents, or 80% of them, and 113 employees have been vaccinated. The nursing home plans to do more on January 12th. So December 22nd, they vaccinate 193 people that are residents. Seven days later, all these people die. I just find that really, really hard to ignore. As I said in the beginning, and as they know, as the UK said, well, we need a whole new AI system to make sure we manage all of these adverse events. They knew this was going to happen. So what we could be staring at is a way to cover up side effects, as I said from the very beginning, to argue that these are just simply these are very severe side effects of the vaccine distribution that are being labeled as COVID-19 deaths just because they're old people. So when's the last time? I mean, look at what they're arguing. They're arguing they got COVID and then 8 days later died. Where does that happen? I mean, surely it could happen anywhere. But the point is, in a general sense, with their narrative, that's not supposed to happen. They're supposed to be at least they're claiming all of this basically happened in 8 days. Does that sound like COVID-19 the way they describe it? Or does that sound like a reaction after a week of getting vaccines? I'll leave that to you to decide, but it doesn't add up with their narrative. It shouldn't take only a week. It should be longer than that based on their own narrative of how long this takes. Doesn't mean that proves what I'm saying, but it means, as always, there's something this seems suspicious, and I'll leave it to you to dig into and ask questions. Here's another example. This is somebody on Facebook, so you can credit, take it for what you will. If you are considering a vaccine for COVID, the Moderna one, she says, she would advise against it. She's in bad shape. Every day getting worse. This is basically her tongue tremoring, she said. Scared to death, to say the least, and find someone willing to attempt to figure this out. It's been very sick. Basically, she went to two different hospitals, and no one could help her. She's having seizures. I mean, she's in the hospital bed right there, you can see. But the point is, they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do. They won't say vaccine. send you to a neurologist to find out what's going on with your brain, right? This is immediately following the vaccine. There's far too much happening here, guys, for us to not begin to question the narrative. As Patrick Henningsen points out, simple question, is there a problem with the whole government corporate vaccine campaign? Well, the new coronavirus shot does not give lasting immunity, or at all, for that matter, if assuming we take their word for it, that says they're saying, yeah, it happens, but not very long. I don't know if we can believe that. It does not eliminate the virus. It does not prevent death. It does not guarantee you won't get sick. It does not prevent you from getting the virus. It does not prevent you from spreading the virus to others. It does not eliminate the need for travel bans. It does not eliminate the need for business closures. It does not eliminate the need for lockdowns. It does not eliminate the need for restrictions on gatherings. It does not eliminate the need for masking. It does not contribute to herd immunity. Which begs the question, what is actually 95%, what is it actually 95% effective at doing? And yes, the point is that it lessens your symptoms. But I mean, I often made this point as somebody who was losing his hair, that the concept of something like Rogaine, for instance, is a total scam. I don't know whether or not that's actually the truth, but follow me on the logic here. What they're saying, my screen's frozen for some reason, that's interesting. Hold on. Well, anyway, we'll go back to the screen share. We'll leave it at that for a minute. That's really strange. But follow me on the logic here. So there's a company that says, here's a product that you have to take that will help you, maybe, possibly, a percentage of the time, will help you get your hair back, right? And they say, here's what you do. You put it on your head, and, you know, I forget what the percentage was, but let's just say, you know, 50% of the time it works. And when that happens, you stop losing your hair. Not that it grows back, but you just stop losing it for the most part, right? So the point is, if you start taking this thing and you don't lose any more hair, you go, hey, it worked. But if you take this thing and you continue to lose hair, you go, well, I was in that 50%. Right? So the real question is, does it do anything at all? Are you just being toyed with a company that makes cream and they're telling you it works and 50% of the time people just naturally don't lose hair anymore and they go, hey, this is working for me. Just an analogy. I don't know whether that's true or not. The point is, in this regard, think about the concept of lessening your symptoms. How do you ever know that's actually what's happening? You take this thing and you don't really get sick and you go, hey, it worked. Or it never really was going to happen, or it's not actually really there, or the symptoms were never severe in the first place. The point is, it's just an easy way to get you to go, hey, it's working because it kind of says what they said it did. Isn't that interesting? Trying to turn this camera back on, make sure this works. There we go. So it's one of those things where it again relies entirely on trust and authority. That we're going to believe what they're saying because, well, they're authority figures and they must be telling the truth. Our history shows you in every possible way that that's the last thing you should be thinking. But as Ivor Cummings points out as well, wow, what's going on? Truth and science actually coming back from these guys. This is another news talk show. We just talked about talk radio. This is News Talk FM saying recovered coronavirus patients may have a stronger protection from the virus than those who take the vaccine. Uh-oh. Get ready for them to be attacked. Get ready for them to be deleted. Probably not, but the point is, even the people who are mainstream, arguably, people that are parroting the narrative, are beginning to see through it. People who are recovered, whether you believe it's real or not, their argument is that you have more protection than people who take the vaccine. So why would you take the vaccine? Because their argument is they want everybody. Even if you've already got this thing, you need to take the vaccine, which makes no sense in all, in any semblance of vaccine science in the past. But it's coming down around this. It's coming apart at the seams, guys. We see it. Everybody sees it. The point is we need to begin to capitalize on this and take charge of the situation. Because it's only going to continue. Is anybody confused about what Biden and his administration are very obviously trying to do? His website is literally buildbackbetter.com or org or whatever. Build Back Better is the greater reset. If you want any more example of being co-opted by an international agenda, then you're staring right at it. And sadly, I believe that Trump, whether knowing or not, witting or otherwise, very clearly helped build what he just handed off to Biden. Maybe he thought he was going to have 4 more years. Maybe he didn't realize what he was doing. Maybe he's part of it. I don't know. But at the end of the day, we're here and we can see it. So it's time to take advantage of the situation, take advantage of how obvious the narrative is falling apart. If we don't, they're going to get a hold of it again. They're going to use another false flag or another PSYOP, and they're going to push people into compliance, which they're already doing with just simply scaring you, telling you that you won't live your life without it. I mean, it's happening already. Now to finish, if this just wants to free, I actually don't even need to show you this. I'll just play the video. But to finish, I showed you the hospital numbers yesterday. I showed you, or day before yesterday, I showed you how the U.S. numbers on HHS's own website show you very clearly that, what, it was 17% of hospital beds for COVID-19? And at the end of the day, that we weren't even close to overcapacity? So where's the lie coming from? Somewhere. Somebody's making this. Somebody's pushing it. The media means they're parroting this without doing their due diligence. Simply looking at the main source, they just say what they're told to say. So I'm actually not going to end with this. I want to play this video for you real quick to show you more fake news about, we just showed you the idea of the CNN in the middle of the street claiming to be in the middle of chaos with people protesting. And then the guy is watching them on the TV and he's in the hotel right above them and he looks at them and sure enough, there's nobody around them. It's unbelievable. Here's actually the numbers that finally came up. Here's the ones I was just talking about. I'll include this so you can look it up for yourself. It's from the HHS website. We're being lied to. Very clearly. But take a watch at this video so you can understand just how much we're being lied to in this particular topic.
Organize our emergency room and our hospital in 3 levels of intensity, as you saw.
This is the main hospital in Bergamo in Lombardy province. It's one of the most advanced hospitals in Europe.
Desperation in New York as coronavirus cases there continue to skyrocket. Governors plead for help while President Trump urges America to reopen by Easter.
It's all hands on deck in America's hospitals. We'll talk to medical workers coming out of retirement.
Crowded subway cars may have accelerated the spread. New York's governor says FEMA gave the state 400 ventilators. To that, he said this.
What am I going to do with 400 ventilators when I need 30,000?
Medical professionals say they'll reach breaking point if the number of positive cases keeps rising.
I'm not sure if people have seen images early on of Chinese doctors collapsing, which all frightened us. And I think, part of that was COVID, but part of it was pure exhaustion.
Their job will be far, far easier if we all do our bit.
Although our healthcare workers are under immense pressure, new data shows the state is equipped to care for our sickest patients.
Pretty revealing. I mean, and somebody out there will argue, well, it's just stock footage and, like the same way that they showed the Kentucky gun range and said, Syria, once they get pressed on it, well, it was just for context. No, you're lying. You are using that to claim something's happening that's not actually happening. That's called lying. Now, you could argue that it's happening elsewhere. And if that was the case and it's so ubiquitous and it's everywhere and everyone's struggling, then why couldn't you find footage of it? That's the question. The truth is that they're deceiving you. Whether it's just by, not having the right clips or whatever, they're still deceiving you. They're still playing you. They still want you to think what you saw there is what's happening here. And that's why they use it. Every single way, every part of this narrative is falling apart. And every part of it is based on complete and utter fabrications. The whole damn thing. It doesn't mean that there's not parts within this that are actually working or people that within it that believe what they're doing is right. But at the end of the day, it is all stemming back to manipulations. And it's all there for you to see. I've laid it out for you piece by piece from the very beginning, as well as a lot of people have. A lot of people have. But the point is that it's up to you, as always, to question everything and come to your own conclusions. I just don't know why that's even something that people have to be convinced to do. It's really alarming that we're in a world of such social engineering and propaganda that arguing that you should be questioning things and thinking for yourself is like, are you sure that's the right thing? You sounds kind of like a conspiracy theorist. I mean, that's just baffling to me. Hopefully that in and of itself can help shake a few more people free. Thank you for being here, taking the time to listen and think and question, even for 2.5 hours. I know these shows are long, but as it's continued to grow, it becomes more and more, increasingly more important to get this information in. And yes, I know it's long, but remember that concise doesn't necessarily mean short. We're jamming in sometimes 2 to 3 days of content in 2 to 3 hours. That is exactly the definition of concise, despite people not liking how long these things can be. But I get it. It's about getting the most information out there. So help me. Break this into clips. I mean, I used to do clips as often as I could, but I'm getting pulled in so many directions now, it's becoming difficult for me. So if you guys want to make clips of these shows, please do it. Jump in, clip it up, get it out there, share it everywhere. I mean, if somebody wants to start making clips of every little part of the show and sending them to me, I'll put them up on the channel. But just get it out there. Help me spread the word. I love you guys, as always. Question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.